I mean, 32 hours.
Shri Goranga Guna Nuvar Nenavidao Shada Samidhyandi Thao Shri Goranga Guna Nenavidao Shada Samidhyandi Thao Papotapa Nekrinta Nauta Nubritam Govinda Ganam Ritai Anandam Buddhi Vardhanai Kanipa now Thai Vayanistarakao
Anandam Buddhi Vardhanai Kanipa now Thai Vayanistarakao
Evande Rupa Sanatano Raguyago Shri Jiva Gopalako
Evande Rupa Sanatano Raguyago Shri Jiva Gopalako
Achyatva Turna Masesha Mandalapati Shreinam Sadatu Chava
Jatapurna Kadresha Mandalapati
Shayam Sadatu Chavan Bhutvadina Ganesha Kau Karunaya Kupina Kanta Shritao
Bhutvadina Ganesha Kau Karunaya Kupina Kanta Shritao
Gopi Bhavara Samrita Dilahari Kalola Magna Muhar
Gopi Bhavara Samrita Dilahari Kalola Magna Muhar
Vande Rupa Sanatano Raguyago Shri Jiva Gopalako
Vande Rupa Sanatana Raguyago Shri Jiva Gopalako
Shri Sai Goswami Asa Kidaya
Jai.
So again, this is a song by Srinivasacharya. That, and Prabhupada puts it right in the front of the song book because it's such an important song. We should memorize the Gurvastakam. We should memorize this song. Yeah, the morning program songs. Yeah. And a few other songs, maybe like five or six or something, you know, nice songs to meditate and to. One time, Prabhupada had a whole Jamastami program in Vrindavan. He was staying at Vardhamadhar Temple, and he organized a Jamastami program. And the governor of Uttar Pradesh came. He was a friend of Prabhupada. And the program was very simple. There was, inauguration of the program, the reception of the governor, like that, you know. And then he had two songs, like that. An explanation, then comment by the governor, then prasadam. That was the whole Jamastami program. He just took two songs and then explained them like that. So songs are very good for preaching. Yeah, very nice. Yeah. So this one today says, Shri Gauranga Guna Nivarana Vidao. Lord Chaitanya, Shri Gauranga Guna means qualities. Varnana means describing like that. So these six Goswamis, they're very expert in describing all the qualities of Lord Chaitanya. Shvada Samriti Anvitao. And they're possessed of great faith in Lord Chaitanya's philosophy and culture. Like that. Okay. Papa. What does Pop mean?
Sin.
Okay, Papa John. There's a big chain of pizza stores in the United States called Papa John. In Sanskrit, it means sinful people. Sinful people pizza. Papa John pizza. Okay. Yeah. So then, uttapa means like very strong tapasya, austerities. So everybody's suffering from the sinful reactions, like we discussed yesterday. All these sinful reactions are causing distress. And they're liberating everybody by Govinda Ganamritai, by the nectar of songs about Govinda. Like that, pouring on them, it says like that, pouring on them the nectar of Krishna Katha. Actually, in the Gopi Gita, Where's the Gopi Gita?
10th canto of Bhagavatam.
Huh?
10th canto of Bhagavatam.
Yeah. And when does it occur?
Occur?
Isn't it when Uddhava comes to Vrindavan?
No. I think it's when Krishna disappeared at the Rasa dance.
Yeah.
And they start offering prayers to Krishna. Mm-hmm. And one of them is very famous. Tavakatam ritam tapta jivanam kavibiriditam kalmasapaham shravanamangalam shimaratatam bhuvigurnantaye buridadana. They say the people, tavakatam ritam, all the nectar of your pastimes, right? These are the greatest relief from all these people who are suffering in the material world like that, just hearing about Krishna. Who was it? Karl Marx. He said, religion is the opiate of the people. But at that time, opium was a good thing. So he wasn't saying something bad about it. He was saying that this is the only thing these poor people have like that. So he actually was kind of glorifying religion as something that people could take shelter of, ordinary people. Let's see here. This goes up. It does. Okay. So, this is how the six Goswamis, by giving all this literature and everything else, and people can take advantage of it, and they can get free from all their sufferings. And once they're free from sufferings, then they can get positive, eternal situation in spiritual bliss, like that. Anandam buddhi vardhanai kanipanau kaivalya nistarako. They're always expanding the ambuddhi, the ocean of transcendental bliss, and they are liberating the conditioned souls from the all-devouring mouth of liberation. Want some mukti? Liberation? Yeah. Impersonal liberation puts a permanent end to devotional service. Die. Okay. So they are liberating people from liberation. They're saving people from impersonal liberation by drowning them in the ocean of expanding bliss. Tyaktva. What does tyaktva mean? You don't know?
Mm-hmm.
Tyaga? Means to give up.
Yeah.
Give up, okay. They were members of the Mandala Pati. Pati means master, leader. So they were the members of the circle of high society, like that. And they gave it all up as insignificance very quickly. You know? And so we can imagine, actually I have another PowerPoint show on this, and Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami and Jiva Goswami, I guess, too. They were all members of this very elite society in Bengal. And you can't find any place now in the world that is as opulent as Bengal was at that time, in spices, fresh foods and medical knowledge, poetry, music, social organization, culture, everything really matters in life, like that. Parrots who could recite the Vedas and so on like that. Yeah, your parrots can memorize the Ramayana and everything else. And also they're intelligent. You can say Ayodhya Kanda, Bhima Kanda, about a three-year-old child. So they can tell which thing you want to hear, and they can remember them. So they sit there and start chanting them from high like that. Better than an iPod. Yeah. And so many things. You actually investigate. Oh, people were all suffering in the Middle Ages. No. And so Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, after a hard week's work in the government, it's Saturday night, they have a nice festival in their bungalows with their 25 servants and beautiful ladies arriving in silk saris and men with big turbans, horses, matched horses and ivory carriages clattering on the cobblestones like that, with Urdu and Bengali poetry and the finest music and everything else. Prabhupada said what you do is you cook maybe like 45 preparations, all set out very nicely. The people in the order of the house, they go along, they take a little bit, appreciate it like that, and everything goes to the servants. Eat everything, really. But they just look at it, and everything is very satisfying. You take something, nice, But then, most of it, they don't take hardly any of it, So this is a big party. Everybody's happy then, And Papa says that the every 2 weeks there will be new clothes. He said, it's always for the ladies. The men usually like that, new dhoti, like that, and so on. Because it wasn't so expensive. Then these remnants would go to the servants. Yeah. And they were happy. Oh, the master gave me this, and so on. Mrs. So-and-so gave me this sari. You know, this is 2 weeks old. You know, it's used sari. You know, 2 weeks old. So this is a whole society. It was very personal and very much involved with everybody else. But they were happy, even still, with all this, like, you know, art, culture, music. So they gave it all up as just insignificant. You know, it would be hard for us to give it up. Because also there's a lot of... Rupa Goswami wrote... Uddhava Sandesh and other things before he met Lord Chaitanya. So he already was involved in, like, you know, high culture.
Uddhava Sandesh is before?
Yep.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I heard. You know. Actually, I think in David Haberman, if you look in there, he even mentions he was writing stuff before. So, they weren't satisfied, so they gave it all up. And to give mercy to the fallen conditioned souls, Bhutva Dina means the fallen souls. Gana means people. Asha means controllers. They became the protectors and shelters of all the fallen souls, giving them mercy. And to do this, they were living in Kopina and Kanta. And Kopina is just this very simple underwear you wear. Not even underwear, really. That's why, you know. And then Kanta is a quilt. What is a quilt?
Oh, it's like a skirt, isn't it?
No. That's a kilt. That's a Scottish kilt. Quilt means, I mean, if you haven't got it, you have a different word.
Oh, blanket. Huh? Blanket.
It's similar. What it is, if you have like an old, like, well, it's the old sari or something, okay? You find an old sari, you can rinse it out in the river, old dhoti, you know, old blanket. And it's so old that there's, you know, holes coming in them like that. You put one, two, three, four, okay, now the holes are finished. You just take some thread. And that's called quilting, you know. Mm-hmm. So you take all this old cloth like that, which everybody's abandoning, and that's kanta. So they were living basically just in their kopins and these quilts like that. Sometimes you just, I mean, that not now, but before I used to see people in Vrindavan like that. That's all they would have, just basically this in their kopins, and they would just kind of cover themselves and renounce. Yep. They would take the chapati flour and make it into a ball and just put it in the coals. And it would, you know, would burn a little bit on the outside, and the inside would bake. And you'd take a rock and break it like that, and have your prasad offered to Krishna like that. So very, very renounced, you know, some people. Sometimes you find too the side of this. You walk on the side of a pathway, and the you know, goes like this, the earth, and somebody's just taking and making a space in there, right? Just long enough to get inside and lie down, like that big. You take some grass from the field, you know, just pick it and weave it into a mat, put some loose grass below it, another mat to cover the door, you get inside, put the mat in there, your body holds it in place, and your body heat will keep it, like, you know, relatively warm. Okay, economic development. I was describing, I basically have three sets of clothes like this. You know, actually, I'm traveling this time before, I'm just traveling now with my briefcase, and a carry-on bag, a small carry-on bag, and then for 4 months. So I mentioned that to Lena. She's like a Russian girl. She's a devotee. Bhaktin.
What's her name?
Lena.
Ah, Lena.
Swin and Lena. Lena,
yeah. You know, I mean, we have so many Lenas.
Yeah, yeah. So she actually, there's a thing in Russia, like a star search thing where kids compete.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all in Russia. She came in second place when she was like 7 years old.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyway, then she became a book distributor, and she'd go door to door, really good. And then she got terrified when one dog as big as she was tried to eat her. So she's all the door shut and bit her on the shoulder. And
she bleeding. From which part of Russia is she? From which part of Russia is she?
Ukraine.
Oh, Ukraine, okay.
Yeah, yeah, but it's a question time ago.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, she heard about like how sannyasi is living, and she said, wow, if I had to live that way, I would go mad. Prabhupada says, ordinary girl will not be satisfied with less than 2 or 3 dozen saris.
Phew.
Like that. Yes, it's ordinary girl.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I have many ladies that they have saris and they never plan to wear them. You know, they just hang them in their closet and look at them and stuff like that, you know. Somebody's different in their position, but this is the Six Goswamis. They were extreme renunciates. You know? But, and Prabhupada says in the lecture on this, he says, you cannot live like that. You just go mad. Gives the example of somebody who was a big judge under the British authority, you know, big responsibility, judging very important cases. So he joined Gandhi's non-cooperation movement and just retired early. So they gave him a pension as an insult, you know, basically. And it was enough to maintain one servant, a little cottage for himself and his wife. And before he had maybe 25 servants, big house, all these activities. And so Prabhupada said after 3 years he just died, you know, from, you know, lack of stimulation. So six Goswamis, they gave it all up, living under trees, everything else like that. But what did they get? Gopi Bhava, okay. Rasamritabdi Lahari Kalola. Lahari Kalola. It means like the coming and the going. They became more with Magna Muhur. They were drowning, diving, dry diving, drowning, immersed again and again in the ebb and the flood of the gopis' love for Krishna. Okay. It's Krishna's birthday party. And Radharani, Radhika, who's 14 years old, try to remember when you were 14 years old, okay, and how life was, okay.
And hard.
In essence, in the United States, it's like until sixth grade, your elementary school, and there's middle school, it's like from eight to nine, okay, then there's high school. Now, that's one of the biggest problems in your whole life, because you're not a kid anymore, okay, I'm a kid, forget it, you know? You're not an adult, you're trying to figure out who you are. We do our money for your shows. Little kids would just watch. It was a pretty thing. And the older kids would watch it, the intelligence. But you can just tell those little kids, they would all kind of like look at each other. Is this cool? It's cool. Okay. They went down. They didn't, you know, how do I identify it? But they weren't adults. And they weren't children. So that's when all these conjugal affairs are going on. And it's very nice because it's just like full of so much like innocence and, you know, creativity and everything else. Prabhupada says none of the activities of Krishna, the gopis, are all that important. But to them, they're very important. It's just like that. And you know, junior high school, and our place was that these guys, the football players and stuff, had these pins like that. They got, you know, so some girl would get the pin, like big deal like that, you know. So it's a very intense time. So anyway, okay, Krishna's 14 years old, this is his birthday party, and Radhika and all of her friends that work so hard arrange a very nice birthday party, and practicing the song and dance for 2 weeks, and cooking everything else. He got Radharani looking casual after 2 hours of work on her, and she looks casual like that. Oh, you like it? I just threw it on like that. Yeah, and I said, this is going on. Okay, so Krishna's supposed to be at 12 o'clock. Krishna's not there at 12 o'clock. Krishna's not there at 12:10. Krishna's not there at 12:20. Okay. So someone, little Gopika, runs up saying, I know where Krishna is. Where is he? He's at Chandravali's house having cookies. Okay. So how is Radharani going to react? You know?
Angry.
Maybe. Or she might become completely humble. You know, just like fall into the ocean of humility. Oh, that's because Chandravali loves him more than we do. That's why it's happening. So the gopis don't know how they're going to react. They're full of unpredictable emotional states of existence. You know? So it's just like, you know, everybody's looking at Radharani. And of course, Lalita and Vishaka are part of this whole emotional thing too. So she made this flip out, you know. And that's the whole thing. Like, have you ever seen movies of tsunami, you know, from Ground Zero? No, it's just, actually one guy was up on a hill, like maybe like a, you know, 10 meter tall hill, little cottage like that, and then all of a sudden you hear this like kind of roaring noise, and the guy's talking, and this amateur camera goes up, and all the water in the ocean is just kind of disappearing like that. Ooh, the water's gone like that, you know. And then you see it coming back, and now it's, you know, 12 meters tall, water like that, you know, so on. Yeah, like that. It's a tsunami. It's just like you shake the rug, but the water does the same thing. So all the water goes back, and now it comes back again. Can imagine 12 meters tall, more than that, but 50 feet. It's going to be like about 15, maybe 20 meters, 20 meters high coming back at you. And the guy's screaming, yelling, oh, this is great. And suddenly he realized, hey, this is 20 meters tall, and our hill is 15 meters tall. So then he starts running out the door, and the camera is like still going. So you hear this wave, roaring sound behind them, and they thought they made it out like that. So. But that's what it is. That's small compared to Radharani's emotional reactions, like that you wish you were in a tsunami rather than going through what she's going to go through at this point. There's nobody who's more intense than she is like that. So the one hand, she becomes angry, and everybody else is just, you know, running out of the room or everything else. else joining her. On the other hand, she goes into lamentation, and the lamentation, the gravel outside is turning into liquid and flowing down the road and stuff like that. Yeah. So yeah, they got that. Good deal, huh? Yeah. So that's what, you know, they gave up all this high society to become merciful to all the living entities in the world. They were wearing Kopina and Kanta. And what did they get? They got this gopis, emotional existence of the gopis in exchange. Vande Rupa Sanatana Raguyago Shujiva Gopalako. So it's a very nice song, you know, to memorize. And a little bit word by word. Yeah, you take your time. Actually, what happens is you just kind of, when they're doing the word by word meetings every day, just don't kind of space out, like, we got to go through this, I'll think about something else. But actually try and even guess and stuff, and you actually pick up a pretty good vocabulary. What we need then, actually there's a book, it exists. One devotee did like maybe a 25 introduction to Sanskrit grammar, but it covered everything. But it's like a little overview of everything like that. And Amalabhakta, what's his name now? Amogalila. He did his PhD in Sanskrit in Berkeley. And I gave it to him during japa just to look at it. He just stopped doing his japa. I felt so ashamed. He was like cowering. I said, wow, this is incredible. I said, everything is there nicely explained. And it's 25 pages like that. So after you read that, when you look in the verses, you can start to pick up on, oh, these are case endings. Krishna, Krishnat, Krishnasya, Kanai. And all that Krishna means, okay. So it's like a little bit of orientation. But every day you're like starting to learn.
What's the name of the book? Huh? What's the name of the book?
It was something, Introduction to Sanskrit. Then he did a bigger book, which he kind of lost, lost the thing. And I gave my copy to someone and they didn't give it back. Okay. So typical. Another trick is to learn Devanagari. Is just the first letter in the verse that day. You just look it up in the back and just practice that letter like that. Okay? Yeah. So you can... It's incredible. The word-by-word meanings of the songs and stuff like that is so intense. It's just six times the potency and stuff. I know the general translation, okay, but when I know the word-by-word, it's just like... intense.
But most of them Bengali, no?
Huh?
Most of the songs, they're in Bengali language.
Yeah.
It's not the Sanskrit.
Yeah. It's similar. Yeah. Yeah. The grammar is probably the same. Look at that.
Oh.
I think of it. It's just like, what do you say, Latin and Spanish or Latin and Italian. Like that. Doctore. Yes, in Spanish, muy bien, Italian, va bene. If a person who speaks Spanish, a Spanish-speaking person, hears Italian spoken slowly, he can figure out, 80% what's going on like that. Mm-hmm. And language groups. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Bengali, Hindi, so similar like that. Yeah. I started studying Hindi, and right away I could pick up on a lot of the Bengali then. Yeah, it's very similar. Bengali, Hindi, Marwadi. Yeah. Prabhupada recommended learning Hindi. He said, if you want to preach in India, learn Hindi. And then Bhavananda was teaching, I think, Sanskrit about Bengali, and Prabhupada said, why is he teaching Bengali? And he taught Bengali. He said, you should teach Hindi if people want to preach. And he said, yes, you can do it. You can study Hindi. You can study, I think he said, 4 hours a day. And that's enough. I think if you're studying Hindi 4 hours a day, that's enough service to do each day. So 4 hours of intellectual work, Prabhupada considered a full day's work. So this leads to any comments?
Can I ask something again?
Yeah.
This introduction to Sanskrit, who was the author?
Wow. The Venugopal?
Venugopal, probably, yeah.
From Vrindavan?
Maybe we have it in here in the library.
Oh, if you do, I've got like a copy. It's very nice, you know. It's this kind too, for example, he finally comes to the point of making sentences. He has sentences like, I am a fat grihasta. It's like things you remember, funny. It's an ISKCON type book like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're very sophisticated ones. I mean, you've seen these just big, big sophisticated Bhagavad Gita, Sanskrit grammar based upon Bhagavad Gita. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Prabhupada told us one devotee to do it. But it's too sophisticated. But to me, I want to generate something which, again, I'm based on the Upadeshamrita. You know, so you just go through Upadeshamrita and you begin to pick up the cases, the tenses, like that. Yeah. And one really good book on Hindi is by Rupert Snell. And Radhika knows him. He was at the University of London. It was good for many books. Like the first six lessons, seven lessons are just super incredible. How he teaches you like words that sound the same. Hombre in Spanish. Hombre is man. Hombro is soul, shoulder. And hombre, hombro, hunger. Tengo hambre, hambre, like that. So all three words sound the same. And so your mind can pick them up at one time like that very easily. And just and then the little difference or different meaning like that. So so many techniques. And incredible book. But what happens is that after the first six lessons, he just starts to, somebody needs to accelerate and goes into all these sophisticated, you know, details in Hindi like that. And it's just way too fast and way too complicated. But for the first few lessons, it's a very good book like that. And we were translating it into Spanish. Because if you... Many Hindi words are the same as Spanish words because the Muslims conquered India and they conquered Spain. And so many Hindi words are not Sanskrit-based, they're Arabic-based. And many Spanish words of culture are also because of that. They're not Latin-based. In Hindi, this is mej. In Spanish, it's mesa. In Hindi, this is kamish. In Spanish, it's camisa. Like that. So it's because of this. So if you speak Spanish and English, then the Hindi becomes like, you know, so many things you can pick up like that. Yeah. Other way around. I don't know. Okay, languages. It's good. It's good. You should learn some Sanskrit. Okay. Who is Bhartamuni?
I started yesterday.
That was a reading assignment. Yeah. Did you get to do it?
Yeah, but not completely.
Is it dead?
I came to Bhatta Lolata.
Huh?
I only came to him.
Who? Bhatta Lolata. Yeah. Did you do it at all?
I made it.
Football? Soccer?
Yeah, it's Avinash Gupta.
Avinash Gupta.
A little bit in him.
Yeah.
And then I lost it. Yeah.
Okay. That's why I gave you the outline, because if you don't know like the general principles like that, you gotta go, you know, who's important here? After you, okay, these are the minor guys. Skip over them. These names I should remember. He's in an introduction. We did it yesterday, and David Haberman gives a history of rasa theory. So rasa theory mostly comes from psychology or from theater.
Theater.
Okay. And the first person, and it appears in the Puranas and the Vedas, the word rasa.
Bhartamuni.
Huh?
No?
Yes.
Because he's the one who wrote.
Yeah?
Bhartamuni, he's the one.
Before that, it actually appears in also the Upanishads.
Oh.
In the Vedas like that, the word rasa. It describes it as being the essence of everything.
Oh.
We discussed that before, how ultimately everything, even geometry, is based upon what's tasteful, right? That you make your decisions about your basic principles for no reason at all, you know, like that, axioms. So then, when did Bhartamuni write it? Before or after Christ?
After.
I'll go with before.
Okay. David Haberman says the copy we have probably was composed like maybe 2nd century. But the indication was that the actual text was there all the way back, maybe three centuries before Christ. But it's passing around this way and that way, and finally got what we have written down like that. Okay. So, time of Buddha almost. Then, what was Bhartamuni's goal? What was he trying to do?
He's trying to break down emotions.
Yeah, why? What's the difference between Bhartamuni and Aristotle? They both have their theories of drama. What was the central thing for Aristotle in the drama?
Oh, we went over this as well. Was this the whole circle thing and the square thing?
No.
Okay.
That's the pigeon. Pigeon.
Okay. I'm blowing nuts.
Plot. Yeah, plot.
Yeah, this is the plot. And I gave a plot in one sentence. Remember the plot I gave? One sentence. Evil Burmese drug dealers kidnap some Manipuri's younger sister and he and his friends get together to go, so you go save her.
Yeah.
We're going to have a title is going to be Kung Fu Killers of Hare Krishna Mountain. Like that. Yes. Manipur is an interesting place. They would love it. They would love it. Mm-hmm. All the actors, like, oh, Ham, they just love to act. You know, so on. Burma's like their neighboring guys. They all got so much, the drugs are manufactured in Burma, they slip through Manipur into Calcutta, and they go like that. It was a big, you know, big traffic route. Yeah. So, and in Bhartamuni, he wasn't emphasizing the plot, he was emphasizing
rasa, like,
yeah,
the feeling.
The whole thing is to produce a certain, like, feeling, perspective, attitude. Not just like an emotion, but more like even an attitude towards life. You know, Baba means that more than emotion, it means like attitude or something. It's what is the Baba at the time of death? Prabhupada translates it as consciousness. How do you say ISKCON in Hindi? How do you say it? Shri Krishna Antarastrika Bhavan Amrita Sangha.
Wow.
Shri Krishna Antarastrika. International, Rastrika is national. Shri Krishna Antarastrika Bhavan Amrita, mm-hmm. That's consciousness. Sangha, association. So Bhavan Amrita is consciousness. People, this word developed during the hippie time, and it's actually incorrect. I had one professor in the college with this whole thing about arguing. Science means to know, like science. Science means to know. So consciousness means a common knowledge. And usually refers to some evil thing that we're trying to keep amongst ourselves, like a guilty conscience. Yeah, usually refers to something like negative type thing, traditionally in the ancient history. So the hippies and everybody else took it to mean something else. It wasn't like a common, maybe it is kind of common knowledge. But consciousness means like perspective and everything else. But that's, you're saying it should be more like perspective or attitude we're talking about. But Prabhupada adopted the local language. So Krishna consciousness, perspective on things. And Bhartamuni wanted to recreate this. And what did he think? What was his plan? And our idea is he got this from somebody else. He didn't just come up with it and invent it. That's what they think he invented it. But no, you'll see that he... So the Vaishnava starts investigating, you'll probably find indications where he indicates, I got this from somebody else. But here they say everything is evolving and somehow he just started it, you know. So what's his goal? How is he going to do it? How is he going to create this Baba?
This has to do with like the stimulus and the reaction, like the Vibhava and the Anibhava.
Yeah, yeah. What did you read? When you sat down one day under an apple tree, apple falls.
And then you discovered gravity.
Yeah, discovered rasa. Yeah.
I'm not so sure, actually.
Because he wants to create this in the audience, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's theater. You know, to how much money is there in movies?
A lot.
Yeah. For example, I don't know what the budget was. What the one, the Avatar?
Avatar. Oh, yeah.
I wonder what the budget for that was.
It's been huge.
Maybe, I don't know. Something like, you know, for $40 million or something like that. You know? Yeah. Probably. Yeah. Whew, wow. It's expensive. You know? So, yeah, there's a lot of money in this. And so people are... Why? Because it's what people want. And what do you go to work for? To get money? So on Friday or Saturday, basically in America, I mean, here it's the whole thing is you... On Friday night, you stop off at the pizza store, right? You stop off at the DVD rental store. Your friends are coming over. And one guy is bringing marijuana or beer. It's one of the two. And you have either beer or marijuana, depending on what your particular community is. Have pizza and watch it, a DVD. And that's life. One guy, American guy, he said, Hanuman Swami, if you can control three things, you can control America. Beer, marijuana, and DVDs. And that's how it goes on. A little low-class, low-grade intoxication, and some kind of like, you know, emotional experience, and that's why people go to work. Other than that, you know, they wouldn't make it. They all go nuts. And so, of course, do you think that the media environment is controlled by the governments, controlled by the controllers? Do you think they can watch whatever you want to watch?
I don't think so. I think they can kind of control that.
But big person for this is Noam Chomsky. Mm-hmm. You know him at all?
I heard the name, but I'm not sure.
Chomsky developed this whole new theory of grammar in the beginning, and he showed at university how there's certain children learn. Usually they learn names, you know, milk, you know, hungry, you know, something like that, you know. And then they learn rotationally, start to mix it with milk now or no milk. You know, see, there's rotational grammar. He developed this whole thing, and wow, it was just very revolutionary. But then he got into how people were using language, you know, to manipulate people and everything else. And the Vietnam War started, and he started this whole, like, you know, thing about exposing media and government and control. One of his best movies, probably on YouTube, I think about that, is, what's it called? The Manufacture of Consent. It's a really good movie. Okay, yeah. So it's easy to read, it's well done. And at the same time, too, I mean, you really learn something. And if you talk to people, many, many people, who are nice people, they know this. The Manufacture of Consent.
What is the consent?
Yeah?
Consent.
Consent. You. I consent. I agree.
Oh.
Yeah. Because in a totalitarian society, they say, you believe this. You know, this is Big Brother says, okay. But in a liberal society, you think that you have a choice. Like that. You know? So he goes through this whole thing, and it's something like, I forget what it is, it's something like 80%, 85% of all bookstores, magazines, newspapers, television, radio is owned by 30 corporations in the world. 30 corporations. In California, there was one independent radio station was going up for sale, and during the whole discussion, it came up that 90% of all U.S. radio stations are owned by 3 syndicates. Yeah? Like that. See, I have my choice of newspapers here. They're being produced by the same syndicate. Mm-hmm. But they, yeah, yeah. And they consciously, he said, consciously, they demand 20%, you know, what deviation. And not only will they allow it, they actually look for, like, you know, about one time in five they'll have, you know, some article about, we're opposed to the government, we're opposed to this and that. Okay, but 4 out of 5 times, you know. And so they're not like, you know, people aren't like in iron collars being dragged down the road, but they're being herded. Mm. You know, like you get a little about, okay, you can get a lot of light, stop, chew a little grass, and move along, move along. And then people think, oh, yeah, I'm it's much easier to control them than tolerating a little bit of, like, dissent. And they'll even encourage you. Yeah, go ahead, speak out, speak out. That's enough. Yeah. So that's, you know, very much in terms of the content. And he gave an example, which was Pot Pol, Khmer Rouge in Cambodia. It was a big political movement, one of the most murderous since modern time. They did mass graves with, I mean, children and everybody, just 400 dead people in one grave, just killed them all and buried them, you know, just gigantic, you know, murder. And he was our enemy, you know, and so on. So he had all this, he showed, like, the New York Times had, like, this, you know, this rolling out, like, a column, pushed it in a graphic, just rolls out like that, like that, against how Pot Pol was evil and so on, bad guy, you know. Then the East Timora was an island which had just as heavy genocide and everything else. But there was a submarine lane that went, like, goes right off of the channel, goes right off the island like that. And it's very important for U.S. defense and stuff. So they had to have good relations with Tamora. So the genocide there, he rolls it out, it's just like, that's it. It's like, you know, five times as much, you know, wailing and howling about Pot Pol as the East Tamora. And just the same, you go through it, you know, we should have been opposed to both of them just as much like that. Okay, so that's, so this is what's going on like that. And so, I mean, if you look at movies and stuff like that, God, it's just unbelievable. You know, was it it's Troy? The whole movie, Conquest of Troy or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, the Achilles, he's kind of a playboy, right? He has, you know, different women here and everything else. Now, he's the hero, really, like that, you know. You know, you live fast, die young, and have a good-looking corpse. That's, you know, like, that's the motto. Yeah, he's a hero, God, you know, so and so. And then there's a... I had not. Kshatriya motto. Live fast, die young, and grow close. Okay. But the family guy, Hector, he kind of shows up being, well, okay, it's kind of okay if you take care of your family and you die for the just cause. But it's a little bit like, you know. And then his father, who was like this kind of religious guy, comes across as a complete idiot who's following these fools and causing all these problems. And stupid old religious guy who believes in God. It's so much about the gods and goddesses in the story of Troy. They took it all out. You know? Mm-hmm. So they ended up with this thing about, you know, the purpose of life is to get a girlfriend and get a car and all this stuff. You see, on and on, there's so much in the media and stuff. So this is what, you know, Rupa Goswami and Bharata Muni, and they appreciated the same thing. So he was trying to do it by, he had different elements. What the elements were?
Environment, gestures, and responses.
Yeah, in Sanskrit.
Responses is kaya. And then there were also sahakarin, accompanying.
Sahadrin.
So
Sahakarin,
and Karana, environmental
causes. Okay, so also he explains later on, this is the same thing as Vibhava, Anubhava, and something else like that. So today, we're going to go ahead, so what historically then, that he dealt with basically the same terminology, the same ideas Rupa Goswami is using, we'll find in the southern part, in Bhava Bhakti. The same ideas are there, and they're adjusted a little bit, we're mentioning this, that Bharata Muni presented his basic ideas that the thing is created by, again, like by Vibhava, which is a stimulus like that, which, you know, again, what the actors say, how they're acting like that and so on, you know. But that causes a reaction, Anubhava, in the audience, the people like that, the other actors, that also becomes a stimulus like that. If I said I could scream and everybody would... like that, you know, I won't do it. You know. But that, you know, but by seeing everybody else react like that, it also makes you react more, so on. Yeah. Yeah. So that's what he put together. He analyzed, I don't know how many, like 25 emotions or something.
Well, there were 8 main ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And 41.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, you go through and analyze what are, you know, what are, for humor, fear, anger. So you know, good job. Eight were principal. And out of those, we probably come back into the same things we have, of the feeling of friendship, feelings of parental affection. So it wasn't, you can see it wasn't all that different than what finally ended up with Rupa Goswami. And then it went down to, what's the next major guy we're putting in here?
Viramagupta?
Yeah. And what did he do?
I know it from Kadambakalana Maharaj.
Okay.
As interesting.
He's an impersonalist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He messed everything up.
Shantaras.
Yeah, in Kashmir. Shaiva. Probably following Shankar. Yeah.
No, but his attitude towards this whole Rasa experience is that he says, first of all, the actor cannot experience it. Mm-hmm. It's because he's too technically involved, so it's only for the audience. Mm-hmm. And then he said that this is, he equates it. It's kind of similar, but not completely the same, like a yogic, mystic experience.
Yeah.
With some distinctions, one of which is that it's temporary. But
so at least he has some kind of an idea, of elevated idea for theater, which is nowadays, the idea of theater is the most degraded result. You know? Yeah, and so he added Shantaras, but his Shantaras was the highest thing. It's become this point of becoming free from all these emotions and just having a general peaceful appreciation for reality, like that. And he says he deviated from, you know, the ancients, who were the people before who were following Bharata Muni. Then after that, there's Dandan and other people like that, you know, like Bharata Lohita, and they go into them. And it comes about, what we put next is who's next? We put Abhinavagupta.
What's his name?
And then Emperor. Emperor. He really enjoyed life.
Bhojan.
Yes. Bhojan. Yeah. And again, he's an emperor. He was the king of kings. And also a great scholar, other things, architecture, everything. But his thing is in very close to ours, that bhava, prema? Yeah, the rasa is a result of the bhava just maturing. I think Abhinavagupta has something else like that. So the audience... You know, and also to he says the actors, you know, they kind of must experience this. And a modern theory is this, yeah, it's just almost universal, you know, that the actors have to experience the thing. And again, coming to Konstantin Stanislavski. Now, where Stanislavski got his stuff from, you know, a lot of it comes from the Greeks. If you look at the history of drama there, they've taken their theory from the Greeks. And the Greeks very, very well, if you look at these things, again, many times they're going back to other sources, and there was contact with India and everything else like that, especially for ideas. Dora Bassan, our director, Yeko, she liked Mahuriya Ras, pastoral scenes, you know. And in South American literature, where she had these beautiful different writers, they talk about the young cowherd and young shepherd. He played his flute. When he played his flute, the little sheep couldn't take the milk from the mother's milk bag. They'd be kind of stunned with tears in their eyes, and the birds couldn't sing. And beautiful, very pure, like, you know, bucolic, loving affairs with no lust. And, you know, she liked this. She was a nice poetess herself. So for her PhD thesis, she just began to research this. And so she traced it back. And these South American authors said, yeah, I was so much influenced by so-and-so of Flanders. Well, he said, I was so much influenced by this guy of so-and-so. And I got it from the Greeks. And so she definitely traced it back. And many of these analogies, like story analogies, examples, were passed on like that all the way back. And so she got back to the Greeks. And, you know, documenting it very nicely. And then she had this feeling that it was coming from some other source, earlier source. But everybody said, no, culture started with the Greeks. There was nothing before the Greeks. There was no philosophy. There was no nothing. This all happened all of a sudden. So she, you know, submitted her PhD thesis and got that. Great, you know. And then about maybe, I don't know, 7 years later, something, 5 years later, she was in the gas station getting gasoline, and when a devotee girl came up and said, this is a story about Krishna and how he plays his flute, and the calves can't suck the milk from the milk bag. And this is a girlfriend, Radha, and, you know, pure loving affairs in Vrindavan. And she said she was so shocked that she couldn't even move. You know, this was exactly it's like her PhD thesis coming to her in front of her. So the girl thought she didn't want the book, so I didn't walk away, and she said, she kind of like just pushed her hand over on the horn and was saying, Sankirtan, you have these experiences, you know. So they bought all the books she had, they took them home, her and her husband, they're reading them, and everything's just incredible, so nice, you know. They wanted to get more, but the devotees hadn't even put the address to the center in the books, you know. So then they went back to the gas station every day. They were there. So finally, he found a devotee who came there. That's how he met devotees. And, and then her husband was a professor of business management, and he actually was a consultant for big American companies, making a lot of money. I mean, I went in Delhi. As an example, several times I had this experience. We had to buy suitcases in the end to put the luggage in to go back to the West, you know, for them. So in Delhi, in Chandni Chowk, there's always a Chandni Chowk. Over there. There's always like guys that are, you know, fleecing money for all these young tourists, these European tourists are there, and they cheat them out of money for suitcases and all this kind of stuff, you know. So Upanuga went there, Rock Talk, my disciple from India, and a couple of people. He started negotiating with this guy, you know, and the guy's sitting there. So finally he got him down. Basically what it seems like he got him down to selling the suitcase for less than he was paying for it, less than he was buying for it, you know. And the guy was sitting there like cursing in the end, and he thought Rock Talk was also from South America. And Rock Talk's sitting there like that, like laughing. So what's so funny? He says he's describing your mother and sister like that. And I don't want to translate what he said. And across the other guys across the street, the other Indian guys are sitting there like laughing too, like that. You know, we're cheating all these tourists and things like that. But he's just incredible. I just how he negotiates. So then he came in contact with ISKCON, you know, and he wanted to go meet the devotees, everything else. So he went to the center, and it was up the stairs. There's almost no indication, little sign. And he said, I want to meet your director or somebody. He said, okay, our president, he can come. You know. So he sat there, and after a few minutes, this guy came out and, you know, sat next to him. And after about a minute, something like that, he realized he was the president. He said, hi, all right, all right. So he started talking. You know. And he just couldn't believe this whole thing was going on like this. Anyway, so the indication is there. And if you look at these people, probably if the Greeks and everything else, you see, yeah, their ideas are coming. Okay, so she then can finish her PhD thesis in showing the connections with the phrase and some Indian and everything else like that. And then she got an emeritus award. She became emeritus professor on the basis of that thesis. I saw the movie when she got it with the deans there, South Americans, Latins, very, you know, and the other emeritus professors came with their medals on. The whole thing is over. The dean says, when I was undergraduate, Dora Basan was my professor, and as far as I'm concerned, she will always be my professor. I started crying. And so it was very nice. It's Latin America, some feeling, you know. So she did that, researched it. So Bharata Muni, drama, and it goes to Doja. And I'm not sure what the content. It doesn't mention the content so much about the dramas. And, but Shakuntala and all these things are from standard Vedic stories and stuff. So the suspicion that most of the stories themselves are like, Puranic, and even Bharata Muni was presenting these stories and stuff like that. Yeah. So that's basically a summary. Then Bhoja came to this point, then Rupa Goswami then put everything into Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Okay, we're caught up to today then. Only
an hour. A few minutes.
Okay, don't say. Okay. And I go to, what? I go to my PDF file. I go to wave. That's a stupid thing. Gotta click it. Okay, and then I go, waves of devotion. Okay, it blinks up and disappears right in front of my face. Okay. So this file that you have, if you're using the one I got, and she said actually she probably has this one I have, this library is the one I have, found. No improvements. So, but it was okay, it was actually pretty good. Now, where did it go? It disappeared.
But I think yours is better. It has these hyperlinks, isn't it? This is in the waves of devotion.
Yeah.
I think for me it's better because it has these hyperlinks.
It does?
Doesn't it?
Have you used it?
No.
Oh, just okay. For, yeah. No, because the one... one I had doesn't have them. But I think what happened, because last time I did it in Texas, this computer guy did it. But I think he put the hyperlinks back in. But I think it was just part of it. I don't know. Anyway, what I have here is on, my note is down, on page 118 in the book. Book page 118 and PDF page 120. So you push the page down here. Okay. We go through 18, 24, 35. And this thing before, you could put the page number in and find it. With this Windows 8, I know how to do it. Okay. Then we come up with, there it is, the fourth wave. That's the Eastern Ocean. Okay, part two, Southern Ocean. Okay. And, like we discussed yesterday, there's, what is it? Five divisions. Vibhava, Anubhava, Satvikabhava, Vibhicharibhava, and Sthayibhava. So he has Vibhava, ecstatic excitants. And that's chapters 20 through 26 in the Nectar of Devotion. And the rest of you see it's one chapter, two, three chapters, 29, 30, 31, three chapters. And a few chapters. Yeah. But this is like seven chapters. Anyway. So, what we're going to do in the class is go over the general structure and then Vibhava. Like that. I'll go over that. Then, you have to pick out one of the other ones, like that, and read it yourself, including the essay. Okay. Yeah. And some are longer than others. So, basically, there's Vibhava. And Vibhava is what? What is Vibhava?
That's the stimulus.
Yeah, like that. Okay. And then as a result of that, we have...
the reaction.
Yeah, there's two kinds.
The spontaneous one or the one where you're kind of aware?
Yeah. Anubhava is where you've got to use some intelligence. Yeah. And Hikdanadharma gives the example that a mother sees her child and she feels ecstatic maternal affection. And then she kind of like wants to express it. So she, embraces her child. So there's a little bit of intelligence required to express that. That's Anubhava. And Satvikabhava are the involuntary reactions. Your hair standing on end, choking, tears coming from your eyes, becoming stunned. There's eight of them. Like that. Okay. Then we skip to Sthayibhava. And what is Sthayibhava?
Real connection.
That's your fundamental relationship with Krishna. Everything else is kind of like, I think he said the Sthayibhava is like the ocean. And the waves, the wind, these are all things. But the Sthayibhava is what everything else is related to. It's Sthayibhava means fixed. So that's your relationship with Krishna as a servant, as a friend. How you serve Krishna? I serve Krishna as a friend. I serve Krishna as a parent. I serve Krishna as a lover. Okay. So that's Thai Bhava. And Prabhupada calls it permanent ecstatic mood. And Vyabhichari Bhava, the fourth one. And yesterday.
It's temporal. Well,
yeah.
You gave the example of Mother Yashoda cursing.
Using foul language. Hanuman does that too. So it says when Hanuman saw how Sita was being abused, he was using all kinds of, you know, I can imagine what a monkey gets into it like that. He was really bad-mouthing Ravana and everything else like that. Yeah, he was angry. You know. Yeah. So, Chari means to move. Jamuna Tira Van Achari. Jamuna Tira, banks, Van, forest. Achari, moving. So Krishna's moving on the forests, on the bank of the Jamuna. Brahmachari, he moves with Brahman. Yeah. So Chari means to move, Abhi means towards, and Vi means very much. So it means these are sentiments which very strongly impel us towards the Sthaya Bhava. So this is, and I think if you look back at Bhoja and everybody else, it's just the same by that time. You know, they first show up in Abhinavagupta and what they call it now, Bharata. But then later they're there. Vibhava, Anubhava, Sattvika Bhava, Vibhichari Bhava, and Sthaya Bhava. And these are the elements of what stimulate. You know, they can all come to stimulate the Sthaya Bhava. And then that's the immature form of your rati, your attachment to Krishna. And then the rati produces a juice, that's rasa. So we say what's your rasa with Krishna, but it's not actually your rasa, it's what your rati. And rasa is really the, you know, the things produced in the interaction when you're acting according to that fashion. Yeah. Okay. Page down. Southern wave, southern ocean, first wave, Vibhava. That's all we're going to talk about. So this is a reading assignment here. I'm going to catch up on this at some point. In the beginning, he has a Mangala Archana, and he glorifies Sanatana. And this is waves of devotion. It's the same thing in Nectar of Devotion, but he kind of just summarizes important points, differences that need to be clarified. So in the beginning, Rupa Goswami glorifies Sanatana, and Sanatana can be Krishna, or it can be Sanatana Goswami. And he probably was quite conscious of the fact that both meanings could be there. And in the very beginning, he prays to Sanatana Goswami that this book be incomprehensible to illogical, mundane scholars. This is very interesting. You do these university classes and stuff like that, and trying to analyze the whole thing. But right in the beginning, he says this thing. Well, yeah, but it's, you know, it's right there. Oh, well, you know. No, this he says. I pray that this book will be incomprehensible to you. Know. And you see people like David Haberman and stuff. Yeah, they just at that time when he was writing the Journey Through the 12 Forests, he was having a hard time, you know, getting into it because he was so analytical about the whole thing. He joined the Parikrama. It was organized by the Lloyd Bazaar Merchants Association. I know some of them. Every year. And then they have some people go, and they go around it like we do, like in a Lokanath Maharaj's thing, about 1 month. But the real time to do it is Janmashtami, which is hot. It's August. Yeah. So they take off, and they organize into sanghas of like about six people. They put all this stuff on an ox cart, head off, you walk. And he said sure that the guy was cooking for them was cooking a motor oil or something like that. Because these pakoras would come out. And he saw why all these tea stall guys were traveling right along with them with tea and crackers and stuff. So most people could see were drinking tea and eating crackers and just a little bit of like what the hired cooks were cooking, you know. In his group there was a nurse from Bengal and a few other people like that and so on. And he the first thing is you go from Vrindavan. You go to Akura Ghat, you make it to Mathura the first day. And his feet started getting cut right then. You know. And by the second day, he had like, you know, his feet were cut and bleeding and everything else. He has, you know, diarrhea and then fever and everything else like that. He was going on like that, anthropologist. Somewhere pretty early on, he met this one girl named Maya. Okay. read the book like that. You know, and she keeps kind of showing up every now and again and winking at him and stuff like that and so on. You know. Okay. So then at one point, Mathura, Dhruva, Dhruvagat, Dhruvatil, Madhuvan, cut across to Santanakund. And on the way to Radhakund, you make it through Basanti. Krishna was born in Mathura. He grew up in Gokula. And then Radharani grew up in? Ravel. Yeah, Ravel. It's right near Gokula. Then Krishna moved to Chatikar and Radharani moved to Basanti. Then Krishna moved to Nandagaon and Radharani moved to Barsana, like that. Yeah. So three places. Chatikar, when you go south to Vrindavan, you been to Vrindavan, India?
Yeah, once, but only Vrindavan, not around.
Okay, when you go south from Delhi, on the main road, you cut off and head into our temple, that's Chatikar. And you go back on the road back to our temple. So, it's Vrindavan, yeah. So, when he got to Basanti, all these Bengali ladies in the parikha, maybe like 600 people, 800 people, all the Bengali ladies were like rolling on the ground, singing Jai Radhe, and tears coming from their eyes and everything else. And he said, look, you know, I'm a trained anthropologist. I've been through stuff like this before. I know I was under stress, I was distorted and everything else. He said, but as far as I'm concerned, at that point, the goddess was there.
Oh.
Yeah, and by the time he got to Radhakund, he was praying to the goddess to forgive him for being a stupid foreigner. Like that. So he was, Prabodhananda Saraswati says, I know many great teachers, I know many wonderful scriptures, but as far as I'm concerned, there's no teacher like Vrindavan Dham. And I've seen that. This, he was, Dr. Bandhapajaya, our friend too, was just like changing. You know? So anyway, he was, by the end of the book, he was a different person. So then after that, they went to Barsana, they got there, and he was walking around, like an extra day off, and he found a little kunda back on some path, and then Maya shows up, and she says, actually, you have another body you don't know about. Oh, my God. That was going to happen. And she said, look at the kunda, and there was some of these little yellow blossoms that fall on the top of it, and the water was blue, And he said, yeah, you could look at it. And he said, you could look at the tops of the waves or the bottoms of the waves, And your mind could focus on one or the other. And he said, actually, you could look in between. And he saw this very beautiful, young, shy girl and boy meeting each other for the first time, this whole life experience, And he came back, and then Maya was gone, And she never would talk to him the rest of the parikrama. She kind of smiled at him and looked at him like that and something, So maybe a very advanced person. But yeah, it's a pretty nice book to read. It's easy to read. It's the point. For our authority in preaching in the universities and stuff like that, he's like, solid person like that. Yeah. So anyway, Sanatan, is glorified in the beginning as Krishna. And in the very beginning, too, he asked Sanatana to protect the book, from these Mayavadi guys. Then there's an overview, which you're going to read, of the Southern Ocean. It's composed of five waves, he says that. And then he goes to the first little summary of each wave, which we've already done. Vibhava, which is chapters 20 through 26. That's the impetus. And Anubhava is an action that results from heightened affection for Krishna, which serves to further enhance that affection. So it's a reaction, but that reaction also, starts more reaction like that, If you're like sad and somebody starts crying because you're sad, what happens? You start crying too. It's like everybody's feeding back on each other. So the Anubhava is also a Vibhava. Yeah. But generally speaking, we say Vibhava is the stimulus. Then the Savikabhava. Savikabhava is an involuntary reaction that results from heightened affection for Krishna, which serves to further enhance that affection. Okay. The Vichari Bhava is an emotional experience that results from intensified affection for Krishna, which serves to embellish and further stimulate that affection. Okay. Finally, he has Stai Bhava. Stai Bhava is one's eternal mood of affection for Krishna as a passive admirer, servant, friend, parent, etc. Prabhupada defines Stai Bhava as continuous ecstasy. Okay? Another term for Stai Bhava is Rati. You see that sometimes like that. Madhurya Rati, Sakya Rati. Okay. Okay, then he talks about rasa, that we usually mean it to mean one's eternal relationship with Krishna. But strictly speaking, this is inaccurate. Rati, not rasa, is our relationship. Rasa is the juice that instead comes out of, like, you know, expressing our rati with Krishna, engaging like that. Krishna is my friend, and I feel some friendly affection with him, like that and stuff. I die unless I can play with him. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Okay, rasa always, it's always new and tasteful, achieving rasa. In the very beginning, he'll talk about achieving rasa. And he says, usually it comes about, there's going to be two sources. You can appreciate this Mars Bhoja the same way if you had previous contact with that. And I don't know, when you were, did you go to church when you were a girl? Did you have ecstasies and hearing things and stuff like that?
No.
No?
Well, I like to go to church.
Yeah?
Did you see, I like singing.
Yeah? Okay. You didn't go to church. You're a demon. You're a Hindu. But, no, I did. But when they were, like, you know, reciting these things and stuff like that, I would just, I would feel ecstasy, basically. I don't know why, but I was just like, wow, it's just, you know, something like that. And it was so frustrating because nobody in church knew what was going on like that and so on. So every now and again, somebody would come through and just, a few higher things, you know.
Catholic Church?
Huh?
Is it Catholic Church?
Episcopal, which is Anglican, American version of the Anglican Church. Which is, you know, basically it's an Episcopal Church, but they allow divorce. Because the king wanted to get divorced, so he separated and declared himself the head of the church, and then you could get divorced. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other than that. So it's like, you know, kind of like a, you know, it's kind of like an acceptable to Protestants, Catholic Church. And that's what happens, because the Catholics were kind of like, prejudiced against Catholicism in the United States in the very beginning. The Protestants were very powerful. So to be Episcopalian was kind of be a Catholic without being ostracized from society. Mm. You know, so everybody has their position. So it was nice, actually. You know, yeah. So, previous lifetime, you'd have some experience, and when you come in contact with it again, right away, you're attracted like this. Other thing is, what's the other way you get it? That you can actually get involved in experiencing these things?
By devotee?
Yeah, by associating with pure devotees, like that. Yeah. And I heard from Prabhupada's lips when a reporter asked him, Swamiji, what will happen to your movement when you die? And Prabhupada said, I can hear from my lips. Yes, I will never die. I will live forever in my books. Because it says you should act as you hear from the lips of your spiritual master. There's a big problem for the Ritviks. What's in Prabhupada's books? It's those lips like that. Yeah, so we need, you know, somebody. It can be a Kanista Adhikari, but he can tell you, I heard from Prabhupada's lips, and, you know, okay, I've, you know. Yeah. So Prabhupada said, I will never die, live forever in my books. And there's stories like that where people, you know, they got me, this would be like 5 years ago or something. Ayodhya Swami. He's Navaki Bringa Maharaj. He was getting his visa renewed in India. If you do this in Delhi, this is an endeavor, you know, going over hundreds and thousands of lifetimes to get your visa renewed in Delhi. You go there, it's like the business is, you know, buildings built with the British guys, and some of the records haven't been changed since the time of the British, up on the walls, and, you know, it's unbelievable, these kind of places, and stairways falling down, mixed in with totally new cement buildings built by a Russian contractor with elevators, it looks like, you know, like the Luftwaffe building or something, you know, it's just like, so you're trying to figure out where you're supposed to go. So it took him like 20 minutes to find out the place he's supposed to go for renewal. Okay. There's some guy working there, a young guy, 28, maybe a few more desks, other people working. He kind of looks up and he says, what do you want? He says, I'm trying to get my visa renewed. He said, oh, okay, sit down. He said, okay, you got to do this form, you got to do that, do this, okay, where are you from? And he goes, all this stuff, you know. And you can see it was going to take him several days, at minimum. And the guy said, wait a second, I'll help you. You know? So he locked his desk up. He took him down this way, went up this back stairway, came out of somebody's office and said, Rajiv, do this right now. Do it now. You owe me. Okay. You know. And in 45 minutes, everything was done. Like that. He went back to the desk. The guy opened it up. He's finishing the final paperwork. And he said, you're ISKCON devotee, right? You're a disciple of Prabhupada. And he said, yes. And he said, that's the reason I'm helping you, really. Because 1 year ago, I was so confused, you know. But then I got Prabhupada's book, his Bhagavad Gita, and now everything is so clear. My life is so nice, you know. So I thought, obviously, I should, you know, help one of Prabhupada's disciples. Do you think if I wrote to Prabhupada, he'd write back to me? 5 years ago. And that's the way he said it, like that, you know, like, and, but, you know, but he bring him out and said, uh-oh. He said, well, actually, Prabhupada left his body in 1978, you know. So it's like somebody coming in, you're Tulsi Priya? Yeah. Your mother's dead. I agree like that. There's like someone coming into the office and just telling him, say, you know, your father's dead. He's just like, and had this, you know, Anubhava, Sattvika-bhava, Sattvika-bhava reaction like that, and just started crying, and everybody else is looking over what happened, but, you know, something like that. Totally personal relationship with Prabhupada in a very intimate fashion, never any contact with devotees, just with the book. Okay, so you can get that. That by Prabhupada, you can get that experience of rasa. You can start, okay, how to achieve rasa. By previous life or contact with pure devotees. And by sadhana. But the sadhana here usually means sadhana dictated by a guru. Like that you're following, it just kind of like has to be some personal thing there. I don't want to follow the principles, but Prabhupada wants me to. Okay, I'll do it. You know, so you're following the sadhana, but it's really a relationship with, dictated by guru. Yeah. Okay. Although sadhana cannot directly bestow rasa, there is a definite link between them. By faithful adherence to sadhana, one may please the Lord and thereby attract Shuddhasattva into his purified heart, which will cause the awakening of devotional ecstasy, bhava. This bhava matures into rasa only when encouraged or stimulated by the various other elements. Yeah. Prabhupada says, being encouraged by such feelings, one who is constantly engaged in discharging the regulative principles of devotional service in such a way as to please the Supreme Personality of God, it develops two principles of compelling force, which come under the heading of bhava. Thus one enjoys transcendental bliss. Okay. So, okay. That's the basic general principles, how it all works together. The real stimulus is vibhava, and you can appreciate that from previous life experiences, or if you're just somehow or other fortunate enough to be in the association of devotees. This is also mentioned in the very first part, in the eastern part, a little summary of bhava there. There he talks about bhava bhas, you know, nam bhas. It's like the shadow. So there's two kinds. If somebody's experiencing bhava, he comes to the temple, and you can tell the guy's hair standing on end, he's choking like that. Yeah. So there are two kinds of bhava bhas. One is chaya, and the other is, oh, it is chaya and something. Pratibimba. Haya, katama. Pratibimba. Chaya means shadow bhava, and pratibimba means reflection bhava. So reflected, of course, reflection is clearer than the shadow, isn't it? So pratibimba comes about because you have some desire. You want something from Krishna. One devotee, Indian devotee, his American wife was pregnant, going to have a child. He missed Mandalartik usually many times, but then he wanted a son. So he not only would come to Mandalartik, he started bathing the deities every day to get a son. And he had a daughter. She's very nice. She got it. It's like it's totally attached to a little girl like that. She's very happy. So, but he was experiencing like his sentiments and stuff, ecstasy, worship, bathing the deity. So that's pratibimba. It's because you want something from Krishna. You go to kirtan, you want mukti, you want liberation, you want mystical powers, you're worshiping the deity, and you experience bhava. But it has less chance of maturing into real bhava because it is based upon, you know, material motives. But it can be more intense sometimes. It's practical. We see people coming like this and that. Oh, the guy's bhava. Yeah, this is because he's coming for a certain motive. You know? If you don't commit offenses and you're careful, it can become the real thing. I think it's called bhava bhas. Chaya is because you're born in the Hare Krishna movement and you just got to do this. You just show up there and you like it. It's kind of fun and it's ecstatic and this and stuff. And basically it is. It's because you're just kind of a shadow and you're kind of following Prabhupada's movement. you live next door, your girlfriend likes them. You know, it's just you kind of in there. And it's, the motivation's not so strong, it's not so clear, intense, but it's not also not based upon, the motive's not so like different than anything. It's kind of there. And it's just, I had one devotee, Shamakun. His father was a devotee. And he said he was, you know, he was going through the whole thing. He said he was actually about 17 years old. He finally realized that chanting Hare Krishna was like potent, this and that. Before he said, he said that was just something you do. You know, you comb your hair, you get a haircut. It's just something you do, and it was just okay. It's just this and that. You know, everybody's got a religion. You know, my friend's a Catholic. You know? But 17 years old, he had this experience of like, you know, the mantra is potent and everything else like that. So it kind of went from chaya bhava vas, to actually a real experience of the thing like that. Sound familiar?
No.
Not yet.
Yeah.
No, it's not, yeah. So it's. Yeah, I know one Mormon guy. The Mormon Church is a corporation soul. It means the whole thing, all the churches, all the branches, everything else are one corporation, and the corporation is one person. Yeah, he's the prophet. You know, that's what it's set up. If he goes off, the whole thing is finished. You probably have to assassinate him to get him out of there, make it look like, you know, suicide. That's what happens sometimes when the popes disappear. And so, but with him, then there's the apostles. There's like 12 apostles, like Jesus, you know. So these guys are up there very top. So this really nice history is one guy was born a Mormon. He grew up Hari Bol, you know. Took baptism, and the guy at the time of baptism said, "I'm inspired here. Maybe may there be special intervention for you in times of war or crisis. And okay, you're baptized. You're 12 years old." Then World War II came. And he was trained up, you know, he was sent off on this troop transport with, you know, 5,000 more soldiers and 40 troop transports heading off to one little island in the Pacific Ocean called Iwo Jima. You know, it's a story that one young industrialist, maybe like 35 years old in Europe, well, very successful, he could see that, you know, World War II was coming, so he sold everything he had, went to a Pacific island just to wait for it to finish off. I think it was Iwo Jima.
Okay.
That's where the Japanese Empire and the American Empire had it out. You know, okay. No, this is going to be it. You know, neither one's going to back down. It was like every day, 15,000 dead. Imagine 15,000 dead bodies. Yeah, to tomorrow, 12,000 dead bodies. Tomorrow, you know, 14,000 dead bodies. It was... The guy bought this place to get out of it, to escape it. You can't escape your karma. War came right to this guy's doorstep. Almost every square foot was like, you know, fought out with shells like that. So he would go to church every Sunday on the ship. There was a chaplain there, and there'd be like out of 5,000 people, there'd be 150 guys there on Sunday. As he started getting closer to the landing point, he started going up. So the last day before they landed, everybody was on the deck outside praying to God. You know, okay. They hit the thing, the little craft. The thing comes down. All 25 guys run out. Within the first 5 minutes, you know, 18 out of 23 guys were dead. Machine gun bullets are about this long, and they're coming at you at something like about 400 kilometers per hour with a solid steel tip. They don't just hit you. They just go right through and hit somebody else. You know. So he was with his face down in this one crater. Some shell hit him, and the bullets were just barely couldn't get him. You saw his face in the ground. And he said, for the first time in his life, he prayed sincerely. Oh, God. Are you there? Are you there? There's a phrase: there are no atheists in foxholes. In Spanish, no hay ateos en trincheros. Yeah, every language has this phrase: there are no atheists in foxholes. You know? Big generals, you know, they go, yeah. If you've been there, it's just. Whether God exists or not at that point. Because, you know, so he said, you got this feeling that, yeah, I'm here, I've been here all along, okay, let's go on. So he fought his way off the beach, and they fought their way inland with heavy casualties. They sent the lines up. And like this tank started coming, the Japanese tanks started coming, crushing people, blowing people up, and they didn't have anything. They're screaming for somebody to go off and get a bazooka and shoot at this thing. So he's running his way. He falls down. It's like a cliff like this. You know, the tank has to go like that. He got his head underneath the tread like that, you know. His helmet stuck there, and the thing stopped. His head, this thing, kicking his legs, screaming like anything, you know. His head like a grape under like, your foot. The thing stopped, never stopped, Jesus. You know. So this one sergeant runs over with a machine gun going, cuts his, you know, his helmet and pulls him out, and it goes over, and his helmet's like flat, you know. And the sergeant says, "You're one goddamn lucky son of a bitch," like that, you know, pulls him out like that. He was always giving me a hard time because he was religious. Okay, you remember that, I got this benediction. So 3 days later, they were going inland, patrol, five guys, you know, seven guys, and they came back on this little kind of valley, and suddenly to go back to their lines, they suddenly realized there were Japanese on both sides. They started shooting at them, they jumped in a hole where they couldn't shoot at them. They were within yelling distance of their own line, and so the sergeant's yelling at them, "You idiots, what are you doing? You know, there's Japanese on both sides, okay, just stay there. It's going to be a full moon night, but at a certain time it's going to be before, it's going to be the moon's going to be at its bottom, the dusk is going to be at its bottom, it'll be like very lowest light. We're going to get every single soldier we can here, we'll try and keep those guys down. Okay, here it is, 2 o'clock in the morning, Haribo," you know. They started running. He said within the first 30 feet, you know, three of the guys were dead. And the other guy was dead within 10 more feet. He had like maybe 100, you know, 30 more meters to run. And every single Japanese soldier on the face of the earth shooting at him, machine guns, rockets. He said, first thing he got his boot heel blew off, and that's how he's going on with his foot flapping like this, like that. This guy shooting at him, and a bullet blew off his pants. Literally, his belt buckle, it blew his belt off, his pants fell down. That is true. His foot flapping, holding his pants up, and all the world is saying, shooting at him. You know? And people are shooting at him. He falls across the line. There's this sergeant there said, "You're one goddamn fucking son of a bitch." Yeah. So this went on like that. Okay. He made it through World War II alive. He became a bishop. Everybody becomes a bishop in the church. That's just what they do. They rotate. So he came home, his bishop, and he came home, and his wife was looking at him. She said, "The archbishop called me, and they're inviting you to become an apostle. And this is like in the 12 guys in charge of the entire Mormon church. He said, "Huh?" It's like, you know, it's just... He said, "Yeah," she was also shocked. I don't know why, but they decided, you know, your name. So he said he went into his den because he was praying to God because he knew he'd have enormous power, just tremendous power, unbelievable over people's lives. And so the devil came and every single temptation could happen. And he said he won. I don't know if he did or not, but he said, "Finally, I came to..." And his wife came in the morning, opened the door up, and she said, "My God, what's happened to this room?" You know, you're emotional, you can feel that, you know. So anyway, that was his whole story. But he was the same thing. He was like a Baba Vas, right? He kind of grew up in the thing. It was a shadow, and that something pushed him to that point where he got the personal connection. So that's where we are in terms of the Baba. You can have it either from previous life experience, association with devotees, or association with pure devotees, like that. Any intermediate questions in today's journey? Yes.
But the real Baba one gets when one follows a specific sadhana that one got from his spiritual master, right?
Okay. Okay. It's kind of ahead of this, whatever. Again, there's two sources also for Baba and for Prema, pretty much. One is sadhana bhakti. How's it going? It doesn't mean impersonal, pretty much. It's like always you got to have a guru, even if you're like kind of following an impersonal system. Prabhu says even the Mayavadis, they accept parampara. You're not going to realize Brahman. They say that. You're not going to realize it without a guru. It's very clear. So the rules and regulations doesn't mean something which just comes out of the sky. It's the rules and regulations given by the acharya and the scriptures like that. So by following those under some kind of guidance, but it may not be so personal. Just like, I've got to go guru, Jesus Christ. But if they follow Jesus Christ's instructions, they'll go to him. Well, how will they know what Jesus Christ's instructions are, Prabhupada? Some priest will tell them. Okay, so it can be like a Kanista Adhikari Sampradaya. But the instructions are there, and somebody applies them, okay. But there's some tapadai, you know, something, well, he heard this from somebody, he didn't invent it, okay. You know. So by that process, one can, you know, go to the level of bhava, you know, and go on intensifying it with no raganuga. You know. But then with, the other thing is then is by the mercy of Krishna, and mercy of the devotees, and that's kripa siddha. You know. And then it's just like somehow or other, you know, somehow or other, a devotee somehow or other has, some ways you have to be in the right position to do this. You know, so somehow he does that, and somehow or other, it's just like that relationship is there, and he just like, you know, says one thing. You know, I read one of these books up here, you know, key to management or something like that. The guy said the first 5 minutes in college were everything he needed. He said after that, everything else was more or less, this wasn't really necessary. It was a book on communicable diseases, communicable disease management. And the professor wrote in the board, enthusiasm is contagious. So that was just, you know, that was, it was Bob, the whole rest of his time, Utsahan, the whole rest of his time, it kind of gurgled around his consciousness, and he kept confirming it and developing it. That was the Bija mantra, like that. And he said, that's it. And the management, the key to a successful management is, and you have to be enthusiastic. So same with that's it. It's just like somehow or other, you know, by the association of devotees, you can get the whole thing without exactly following those regulations. But Prabhupada said this is like getting an honorary PhD. He said, don't expect it. Don't count on it. Follow the rules and regulations given by your acharya sincerely, and if something else happens, okay. But don't, you know, Prabhu, I'm waiting for the special mercy. Love is above the law, Prabhu. And who told me that? You know, Prabhu says, no, it's... Yes.
I heard that our sadhana bhakti mixed with raganuga by grace of Rupa Goswami.
No, well, yeah. That's yes, sadhana bhakti means vaidhi bhakti.
Yeah.
And raganuga.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we don't have to do it. I mean, just mayi bhakti hi bhutanam amritatvaya kalpate. Krishna tells the gopis, anybody, mayi bhakti hi bhutanam. Any living entity. Amritatvaya kalpate can go to the spiritual world, the immortal atmosphere, by following sadhana bhakti, he says. But you, talking to Vrijvasis in Kurukshetra, have developed another kind of love for me, which is a spontaneous love. And he says, and that's the only reason for my coming back to you. Because Krishna left them, right? Mm. To all associate people in Mathura, and he wanted them to come back. So you're not going to come back like that. But, you know, they were able to draw him back. Because he had this other kind of love, which Krishna couldn't resist. So, you can do it. You can follow Hanuman and go to Ayodhya. Or else you can just follow the rules and regulations. And Ram will be pleased with you and take you to Ayodhya. Mm. Yeah? So you can do it, but you don't have to go to Vaikuntha. Mm. But if you want to go to Goloka, it's essential. You cannot develop a love of God and the mood of Vrindavan without following the footsteps of the Vrijvasis. Mm, yeah. When the Rajan Prakrama, like that, walking there, you know, every day. Yeah. At some point, you shut your mind down and just follow the foots of the people and person in front of you. It's just like, hey, your body says, hey, you know, I can run the digestive system, I can run the locomotion system, and I can run the cooling system, but I can't do all three at the same time. So you figure out what you want to do, I'm not opening the water and flooding everything out, so you have diarrhea, you know. So you have to start eating incredibly carefully, because if you don't eat enough, there's no energy, and you got to work. Eat too much, and it's just you really for sadhana, it just forces you to go, what's my body, how does it work, what's going on, a little oil, not too much. And so, you know, it's the parikrama's intense experience. So at some point, you just kind of close your mind on, you can't even think, you just look at the feet of the person in front of you and you walk like that. You know? So one of these experiences, we're walking along, I looked over and there's like a Brisbasi enclave, maybe it's like extended family, maybe like five brothers and uncles, aunts, cousins, and they got a few kind of old Brisbasi farmhouses, and you know, it's just there kind of thing. And two guys were arguing, probably like brothers, about who was going to go find the lost cow or something. Well, I got to do this, you know, I haven't got time to do it, you do it, I haven't got time to do it, so forth and so on. Okay, I'll do it, you know, it's like that. So the guy kind of looked over at me, we're going out to take care of the cow, and this thought passed in my mind, oh, it's only by the mercy of the Brisbasis that you can become a Brisbasi. So this kind of spontaneously, I was kind of like looking at him, can I become a Brisbasi? You know? He kind of looked at me like... you know, and like, So basically it's okay, yeah, you can be a Brijbasi, but you go get the cow, man. But that's kind of like what it is. There's just so much serving Krishna that they aren't like greedy, oh no, no, you can't become Brijbasi. They want people to become Brijbasi because there's so much to do. You know? But that's, you know, so maybe, you know, maybe we're ready. Prabhupada's mercy. I think we are. It's going to be Prabhupada's process, and the Brijbasi is there, you know. Because it's a whole internal thing. When you start associating with the Brijbasis, it's just, you realize these are not ordinary people. People who do food for life all over the area, they say the Brijbasis are different. And not that they're aristocratic, they're just like, they're more conscious of everything. And, you know, some of them are thieves and murderers and everything else. You know, they're born in Vrindavan, but they're conscious of Krishna. And they only kill their enemies. That's like kind of godfather. You know? Anyway, so they have this gangs and run Vrindavan, and they have this kind of like gang type thing of, you know, fighting and monkeys, establishing authority. And Bihar Lal, he hit okay. One of the Sharmas beat up one of the Guptas, and he was part of the Guptas. One of the Sharmas was walking down the road, he was in the back of a motorcycle, he took a screwdriver, hit the guy in the back of the head with a screwdriver, he was going to buy, you know, okay. It's Brijbasi, born in Vrindavan. So he went to the jail for assault for 2 weeks, another guy went to the hospital for 4 days for a concussion. But it equaled out the gang toughness, you know, like that. So we didn't see him for a few days. He showed up again. He said, oh, Bihari Lal, where have you been? Oh, I was in jail. Explain what happened. We had to do it, you know, stuff. I don't know. Nothing personal, you know. So, and then he goes through all this thing, and he says, but, you know, Bhagavan's not going to be happy with me. And it was totally personal. It was like Bhagavan, you know, some guy think, where Bhagavan, where is he? Because it was like that. He was talking about some guy who lives down the street around the corner, you know. But it was Krishna. And for the Brijbasis, Krishna's just everywhere, you know. So you start to, you know, go beyond the externals, which they'll keep that, to, you know, to pay the rent. They'll keep the external thing going, but you start looking a little bit. And they're, you know, if you've got the right attitude and stuff, they're willing to play with you. But it's like, you know, starting to play with the tiger. You know, the tiger will play with you. But it's just, you know, a little bit like, a little too playful and just, you know, break your back, you know. So it's probably, you know, you see that. Just, these guys are way out of my league and stuff like that. You know, my wife was playing when Brijbasi like that. She was a lady that runs Papa's room. She was, I've got her name before, Palika. And it's like, I just kind of was joking with her. And then right away, she got like this, too heavy for me in terms of like the joking and everything else like that, and I kind of retreated to rules and regulations, and she said, oh, Hanuman Swami, you know, like that, go on. Yeah, because there's Basis. So yes, without, and our movement, yeah, is trying to go to Moloka. So we always, yeah, mixing, trying to do it. Okay? Okay, let's take a break and come back at 12:07. 12:20. It's on the back.
I have another question.
Did you get the yesterday's class?
I will listen to that.
Okay, then according to okay. Yeah. Basically, we did the four oceans, the four sides yesterday.
Oh.
The overview. And also, we did the Bhakti Shastri review.
Mm.
Okay. So, the name was new for you. Was
okay.
Okay. Yes.
I'm just curious, like, what is kind of stage, like, I was in New Vrindavan 2 years ago.
Oh. Okay.
And for example, Varshana Swami.
Yeah.
As soon as he speaks about Govardhan, he's crying.
Yeah.
What kind of stage is that?
Call it psychosis, schizophrenia. Yeah. But that's what you have to distinguish. You know, stuff. That's why the book is important, because you start to see like what's going on and stuff like that. You know, whether it is, Encyclopedia Britannica says that Lord Chaitanya was a religious epileptic.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, they may have changed it. You know, but it's very difficult to understand these things. So in some cases, yeah, maybe. It may be like, you know, some emotional problem or something that somebody has, or maybe Baba Bas, you know, because of this and that, because he had association with Kirtananda or something he's experiencing, but it's not really mature. And you can see that there's some problems there yet, and is he going to deal with those or not? If he does deal with them, okay, he'll become full Baba.
But you think it's something material? It's not.
No, I don't know. I don't know. So saying that's why we go through this, sort of seeing these things. Generally speaking, okay, we'll get to it later.
Because
I guess we won't get to it.
It's quite. I already saw that is another devotee also, Murari Krishna Prabhu.
Yeah.
Another devotee. He also, I mean, a very unusual devotee. And
almost all these were associated with Kirtananda. Also with Radha Swami too. And so Kirtananda, I think, maybe had some problems, but he did have that intense feelings and stuff like that. So by his association, that community developed of people like that. Yeah.
That means it's not devotional.
No, I mean it was. I mean, I think Kirtananda had his problems later on, but in the very beginning, Prabhupada wouldn't have given so much respect to him and emphasis like that.
Oh.
So you can see that there are people who develop this Prabhupada, because Kirtananda would do severe austerity. It's unbelievable. So
but even I can show the video. Do you know Madan Mohan Prabhu from Russia?
Yeah.
He's serving of. There is one incredible video when he on Radhashtami he's giving class.
Yeah.
And he just normally tells the story of his first experience.
Yeah.
How they were a student in 1992.
Yeah.
You know, just in Russia, just something new.
Yeah.
And how they were cooking, just you know, he would just. Yeah. Spock. Yeah. And there was an accident when they was cooking for a student program prasadam, and one devotee he cooked halva.
Yeah.
And so he couldn't properly cook it.
Yeah.
But finally it was the best dish preparation.
Wow.
And at that moment he just stops.
Yeah.
And he couldn't control himself, you know?
He's come stunned.
Yeah. You know, it just
Sattvikababa.
Because
so look at the person, he's following all the principles, everything else like that. The analysis is genuine. Yeah.
So it's a sattvika bhava.
Probably, yeah.
That means the person on the level of bhava.
Okay, now again, we talk about level, we're talking about curve.
Curve?
Yeah, like that. It isn't like one idea is boxes. You are this, Ador Shraddha, Sattva Sangha, Vajna Kriya, Nana Vishti. No, it's more like maybe he's in the level of Nishta.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's very fixed in his sadhana, following everything, and very rarely does he have any doubts about Krishna consciousness. Adoshrada. He's like, very rarely.
Fixed,
and he's almost, maybe sometimes not associated with devotees, but not again, not very much. Yeah, he's always, you know, so it's like, okay, then, but then sometimes there's a real taste in the service. He's doing it because of taste, and sometimes there's these bhava experiences, and sometimes real prema bhakti. That only happens once every 2 years. But it's there and you remember it.
Oh.
So it's like that. It's just, you know, you see somebody, okay, there he's, it's not unnatural. It's somebody who's got his nishtha and fixed that they're getting a taste in their service and then they become attached to it. And sometimes, again, maybe like, you know, once every 3 or 4 months there'll be some real manifestation of bhava. But then it starts to become every month, then it starts to become every week, and it starts to become continuous, uninterrupted. And then the thing is, can you cover it or not?
He was trying.
Ask this question later, because we'll mention it to everybody else.
Oh, because he was, it was really just spontaneous. And he, you know, he was trying, you know, it's like on this, you know, stage, Radhashtami is like 7,000 people,
going,
you know, in Russia.
The light comes from his body and the camera melts and everybody else, and he's gone, you know.
No, he was really trying to control, and after he just switched the story, he wanted to cover it, you know.
Yeah.
Because he's very humble devotee, so he was... You know, he just switched the story, but, you know, this, you can't, you know...
Yes, so, ask, we'll talk about it later on, everybody else too, because this is the bhava then, Vyabhichari bhava. We'll talk about it in terms of Vyabhichari bhava. Okay? What do I have to know? Sadhana bhakti, sannyasa. Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
You have also to chant.
time to start again. It's nice. Well, Kaiser, like my age, my sannyas age, was rocky, nice, you know, bad.
Really?
Small like that, in the forest.
Yeah.
Old stove.
Wow.
Chipmunks could come in and out again.
Yeah.
A little gated, you know?
Yeah. A little security, you know? Yeah.
Keep the wild boars out.
Yeah. Have you looked at it yet?
No, in Sonata. I think by his tool shed or something. You know, mm-hmm. Yeah. In Russia, I went there. I get other people say, oh, come to Russia, come to Sweden, come to Italy. Okay. So, you know, many times was people pushing to come to Russia, and Vashishta, one devotee, you know, pushed our organizing. So we stayed in after the whole tour, really intense. We went off to someone, there's a town, city. And outside, these devotees had a farmhouse, you know, and it was a little village with a road going through it, like a, you know, dirt road with some gravel. And it was another road which was asphalt, which was kind of simple. Came out to the main road where buses would go by, but within 50 minutes there'd be a bus, you know, right? And you go to the main city, whatever, a little place, you know, to keep out of the rain. And so you always see people, if you're walking out there to catch the bus, you'd see people like walking back up the direction, pulling a little purchase cart, and so in the village itself, there was a really old church with, like, you know, 300-year-old tombstones. There was one big rich house where the rich man lived, with an old, you know, 200-year-old house with a big fence around it, yard and stone thing, other places. And you know, look at this thing, it was just like, you know, you could Dostoevsky told stories, like stories, this little Russian village, but, like, you know, the young boy who falls in love with a rich man's daughter. It's just like, you know, and the madman, the priest, and all. It's just like, you know, something like that. But it was like in the forests. In Russia, there's two winters in Russia. The green winter and the white winter.
Really?
Yeah. That's all there is. That's all. Two seasons. You know, the white winter and the green winter. So that when spring, so-called spring
comes... Sorry, Manaras. Si por si tiene frío.
Oh, I have 3 pairs already.
Okay,
I just
okay.
I use them.
Porque hace mucho frío.
Más o menos.
Para que se proteja los pies.
Yo soy 70% pita. Mm-hmm. Sí, estoy... I have to eliminate heat.
Okay.
So going without shoes is...
It's good for you.
Good for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just in case. It's because I'm always freezing, so I tend to think everyone is freezing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So as soon as the springtime comes there, the nature knows it only has, like, you know, 3 months total for spring, summer, and winter, and fall. So the green just comes out like pollen fills the air in Russia, in the north. And everything, in little places in the country and stuff like that, it's just so, like, rustic with, you know, some woodcutter with an axe trying to kill people or something. Okay, let's start here. Okay, so we're in Vibhava. It's my laser point. So he says, Prabhupada says, when you read this, I would recommended reading here is Waves of Devotion, mm-hmm. like that, on this section, on the southern part. And if you've already read Nectar of Devotion, it's okay. If you haven't read it, he's kind of summarizing it anyway, like that. So Vibhava, the stimulus, is divided into two categories. Okay, Alambana and Udipana, which is called basic and impelling. So it's basic, this means Krishna, and this means things in terms of Krishna. Like I see Krishna smiling at me on the altar, Gopinath smiles at me, and it's just like, you know, some ecstatic experience, you know, when I'm high or something like that. Okay, but then Udipana means I hear him playing his flute, or I see his temple. So Udipana is things that take us to Krishna, and Lambana is to Krishna directly, where you can analyze them. Okay. The next, this is where you begin to see how this whole thing is a highly analytical thing, and so on. So Maharaj is describing that Madan Mohan, during one lecture in Russia, when this became completely stunned, remembering one pastime of Sankirtan and cooking. So what is this? Becoming stunned is? Remembering, okay, it's Udipana, because it's not Krishna, but it's Sankirtan for Krishna. And that stimulates, and the reaction is Anubhava or Sattvikabhava.
I think Sattvikabhava.
Yeah, because he just couldn't control it. Okay. Now he's trying to control it. Okay. Now, next thing we're going to mention this, because this is actually under the heading of Vibhava. But I'll tell you, it's very appropriate then. There analyzes devotees into having two kinds of hearts. It can be either two dimensions. One is you're soft-hearted, and you can have a heart that's like butter. There's a little bit of heat, it melts. Or like a diamond, it doesn't melt with a lot of heat. Diamonds and butter are both good. That's what this is. Some people have, some devotees have soft hearts, some have like very hard hearts. Some have big hearts, and some have little hearts. Okay, they're both good, like that. Okay. So if you have a butter-like small heart, then you can't hide these ecstasies. Now, if I tell you, hide an elephant in the castle, you know, very difficult. But if I say, hide an elephant somewhere on the property in a petite song, you say, okay, more chance, you know. So trying to hide these ecstasies, if you have a broad, big heart, then you can kind of put it here and there, okay, like that, you know. And if your heart melts right away, the second you hear any kind of Krishna katha, all these things start coming. So therefore, you cannot be an acharya for common people if you have a small, butter-like heart. Because they won't understand what you're doing, you know. And so Prabhupada, we can analyze therefore, Prabhupada did not have small, butter-like heart. You know, probably a diamond-like, ample heart or something. Sometimes he would do these things. You hear tapes and recordings where Prabhupada would go into these things and lose control, you know. So one time, Tamal Krishnamurti said, Prabhupada, sometimes you have these ecstatic reactions. We don't know what to do. And Prabhupada said, but I don't do it very often. Because he was, you know, he was feeling it's not appropriate for my position. I'm not doing my service properly. I shouldn't do this in public, you know. So maybe Madan Mohan, we can analyze him as not having too big of a heart, not being too hard-hearted.
He's, you know, he's always against all of these emotions and so on. You know, he's actually very proper. I even had a discussion very heavy with Mahalakshmi because there is Vishwanath, because he's a student of Gopi Pranandana Prabhu.
Okay, yeah.
And he was quoting Gopi Pranandhu like one after another, that the each syllable of Bhagavatam has a rasa. Yeah. And even if we are reading second canto of Bhagavatam, which is full of...
analytical things.
Yeah, so it's also full of rasa. You know, we don't have to go to all this, rasa. And he really, he's against all of these sahajas and so on.
Yeah.
And the fact from him to see that, it was really like... And he was really trying to show you tomorrow.
Okay, it's okay, I believe it. But these things are, again, they're quite possible. Even many devotees, you know, like Jani Vas and Panchangri and Mayapur. You know. But again, I make this point, it doesn't mean that you're on the level of Bhava. It means that you could be coming into Bhava.
Mm.
And really you're on the level of Nishta for the most part. It's a curve. You know. I have very few doubts. I almost never associate with stupid people. I follow my initiation vows. I'm fixed all the time, everything else. And try to get a taste almost all the time in my service. And sometimes I'm really attached. And sometimes I have these experiences once every year or something. So that's, an example. This is a very real thing, right? And so how to distinguish whether or not, because that's like so many people have these experiences and they don't know if they're having a mental breakdown or they're having a religious experience.
Mm-hmm.
So Rupa Goswami gives a complete analytical description by which we can look at this scientifically,
mm-hmm.
right, in terms of modern people. And they can say, I know big people, they say, well, this appears to be there, but you know, how can we look at it in some kind of real, sane, sober fashion? So he gives all these, Mother Teresa gives the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Teresa of Avila.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she gives a whole description also. She compares it to a palace made of crystal with different levels. You start matching them up. And wow, that's nice, because she focuses on certain things. We don't focus on this stuff. So you get some real perspective. It's the same thing. It doesn't matter whether you're Christian, Muslim, or whatever. You're going through the same things like that. So on. Mm-hmm. So it's very practical, actually, for us as devotees. Yadananda Swami's point this morning is that at what level do you start knowing your rasa, these kind of things? I would say at our level, we know our varna ashram, and we're starting to get into that. You know, like in the modern world, they don't teach you what it means to be a woman. Okay, woman 101, woman 101B. You've got to kind of figure it out for yourself, you know. But then, no, varna ashram, there's so many things about what are the duties of being a woman. Okay, I have to be more compassionate. I got this and that. I got to listen to people, you know. But I have a right, you know. No, it's like, There's so many things about that Varna Ashram in a very rich sense, and it seems it's almost just like if you follow it, it'll take you to the Bhava, like that. Because Draupadi is, you know, she's in the Varna Ashram sense, and she's also in relationship to Krishna. So trying to just act like a civilized lady like Draupadi, or like Bhima. You know, what does Bhima do? Okay, so forth and so on. So I think beginning the Varna Ashram is like, you know, a natural way to express the personality, the tastes, and to take us to it as we go more internally, then we start to get, and it's something which we don't have to do with our psychophysical nature anymore. Okay, now Alambana can be decided and divided into two categories. This is Krishna himself, or else Krishna's devotee. That doesn't know if it fits in exactly, but it does. Okay, Alambana, okay, Vishai. Okay, this is on page, wait a second now here, page 127? Yeah, page 127 is a graph, and it's an error in the graph. Oh my God. What am I doing here? Okay. Swarupa, okay. Okay, and it is... Okay. Yeah. Because actually the thing he has in the book here, it says Udipana, basically Alambana impelling. It's actually Alambana, before he has the other side like that, Alamba is actually basic and Udipana is actually this way. So this graph is actually backwards, it's a mistake there. But this, he is talking about Alambana, and Alambana can be divided into Vishaya and Ashraya. Ashraya is the pot full of love, it's the devotee. And Vishaya is the object of love, Krishna. So basically Krishna and Krishna's devotee. Krishna's devotee is the shelter of love of Krishna. He has it. And he gives it to Krishna, the Vishai. Okay. Now, oh my God. Vishai can be divided into... because it's Krishna, right? But Krishna has different forms. Okay? Krishna has Swarupa, his own form. Okay? And he has Anya Rupa, various forms. Anya Rupa. Okay. Okay. Now, and then, okay, Swarupa has two subdivisions, Avritta and Prakat. This gives you some idea how analytical this is. Avritta, or covered, and Prakat, manifested. Okay. Now he gives, these all stimulators. Okay. Now let's go on here. So Prabhupada explains, personal features can be divided into two. One feature is covered, and the other feature is manifested. Okay. Avritta, Krishna in disguise. In Avritta Swarup, Krishna covers himself in a disguise. Okay. So Papa says, when Krishna is covered by different kinds of dresses, his personal feature is covered. Srimad Bhagavatam illustrates this by the example Uddhava said, how wonderful it is that this woman is attracting my ecstatic love as Lord Krishna does. I think she must be Krishna covered by the dress of a woman. Okay. There is a difference between Anya Rupa, other form, and Avritta. Okay. Because this is not just Krishna covered, this is a different form. Like that. Just completely different form, not covered.
For example, Shingadev
or Farana Dev? I haven't even got that far yet. I think it's what it is, yeah. It's like Anya Rupa, different form. Yeah. Okay, Prakrit. Prakrit Swarupa is Krishna's own form, undisguised, and stimulates the devotee's affection. Okay. Okay, then at this point, goes into 64 qualities of Krishna. So I think what is happening here is, oh my God, Swarup, I don't know how this fits on the graph, but then it has the 64 qualities like that of Krishna. Okay. And what is it? You know, 50 everybody can possess. Wonderful linguist, takes care of old people, expert judge of time and place. And we can have these in a little degree like that, but Krishna has them unlimited. But it says that the jiva can have 78% of the qualities of Krishna. So I was thinking 78%, but Krishna's unlimited, we're not unlimited. 50 is 78% of 64. Doesn't mean quantity, it means, you know, the different categories. Then Brahma and Shiva manifest 5 more qualities, which the ordinary Jiva doesn't have. And then Narayan, 5 more, he can create universes. And finally, Krishna manifests 4 that not even Narayan has. You know what those are, even one of those.
I think he always plays the flute.
Yeah, yes, unbelievable flute playing.
And he's always accompanied by his devotees?
Unbelievable devotees.
And has a peacock feather?
No, I think so. He has incomparable pastimes and something else, huh? Beauty. He's beauty. Yeah. Incomparable beauty like that. So there's something with Madhurya, so-and-so. But these qualities, even Lakshmi and Narayan are like looking at Radha and Krishna and, you know, attracted like that. So 64 qualities, and now and then what is that? Lila Madhurya, Prema Madhurya, Lila Madhurya, very sweet pastimes. Prema Madhurya, very sweet devotees. Venu Madhurya, very sweet flute. Rupa Madhurya, very sweet form. And that's all 4. Okay. Yeah. So after this, the page turns white. Chapter 23. Okay. Then, here he just gives a little summary, but in the Nectar of Devotion, it goes through all the qualities. And these are things you can meditate on. You can just read them and chant and think about them, how Krishna's like this and Krishna's like that. And that's what, you know, it stimulates you like that. Wow, that's so nice. In chapter 23, we're still here in, Dibhava. Now next he's going to talk about four personality types. So I guess qualities are different than personality. I can't quite figure this out, but the personality type seems to be a collection of qualities. Okay, and there's Dhirodatta, Dhiralalita, Dhiraprasanta, and Dhirodatta. And they're all Udata, which means extreme. Okay. Dhirodatta is a very noble personality. Dhiralalita is very romantic, joking, funny. Dhiraprasant is very peaceful. And Dhirodatta is very haughty. And of course, that's for Krishna's enemies. And he called Kaliya a black so simple frog. You better find a hole to hide in, because the black snake Krishna is very expert at eating sinful frogs like you. So very, And they point out that these things appear to be kind of contradictory, but in Krishna it doesn't matter, they all fit together. So then there's four types of personalities he goes into. Four types of personalities.
I mean, he contains of these four characters, yeah, Krishna?
Yeah, he somehow raises the question of how... The thing is that when they're mixed together, that's what makes it even better. You start mixing together, halava, what have you got, like, walnut, cardamom, halava. Remember that? It's unbelievable. You toast the walnuts, okay, you got to be like that. In Los Angeles, they put big pans like this. They first you put the butter in, let it melt, check one round, come back, butter's melt. You put the farina in, stir it, come back. And maybe the third time, because you have to stir it because it's just baking like that. You put maybe chopped up almonds in it, like that. And those just bake right in with the butter, okay? And then there you add the cardamom, now the water's ready, you put it out. It's so easy to make it that way, large quantity. And then you get almond cardamom halava. There's this, for Krishna, like that. Yeah. So, what are we going to do? So it's this mixture which increases the flavor. So the 64 qualities mixed together, the different personalities mixed together, in a certain time, place, but you got to know how to do it, to mix them properly. Okay. So he discusses the four personality types. And 24 is further traits of Krishna. And here it gives some more qualities like that of Krishna. Some more. I don't exactly see how these fit together. But these are all. I guess these are all. Swarupa. They're all Krishna, and Alambana, And maybe this all came to this point of Prakas, manifest forms. Okay, 24 more qualities. Why not? Maybe we go down some more here. Krishna, I'm going 8 actually. Yeah. He's decorated, he's enjoying, he's pleasing, he's a meticulous dresser, he's magnanimous. Okay? And then 25. Now we're going to talk about Ashraya. Okay? So these are all come under the category of, you know, of Krishna's personality or Krishna's form. Now, Ashraya, there are two divisions of devotees. Okay? The sadhakas and the siddhas. Okay? Sadhakas. Sadhaka. What does sadhaka mean? As opposed to siddha.
Sadhaka means somebody who practices
devotional
service, and siddha means he's already liberated.
Yeah,
perfect.
But he makes this point: these are very high sadhaka. Basically, they're bhava bhaktas. They can see Krishna from time to time. They have a relationship, but it is still not quite out of the material thing. Prabhupada says here, a sadhaka is an advanced devotee, not just any practitioner. Only one who is full of ecstatic love can stimulate that love to arise in others. Therefore, in this context, sadhaka refers to devotees on the platform of rati. Attraction for Krishna, in other words, bhava bhakta, bhava bhakti. Footnote number 11. Okay, it says here, thus a sadhaka must at least be a madhyamadhikari. Srupa Goswami quotes a prominent verse from the 11th canto that describes a madhyamadhikari as one who has at least begun to develop love for the Lord. Okay? An intermediate or second class devotee is called Madhyamadhikari, offers his love to the Supreme Lord, is a friend of the devotees, shows mercy to the people in general, preaches to the innocent. And of course, this verse is also in Padishamrita too. Okay. So it can be somebody who's on the level of Rati is Ruchi here also, not that be on full bhava. But they, you know, see nice devotees and stuff, you become enthusiastic. Yeah. But basically, yeah, it's an advanced devotee, you know, like that. And Prabhupada says, a person who has attained attraction for Krishna, this is Ruchi, Asaktis, and who is not freed from the material impasse, but who has qualified himself to enter the kingdom of God, is called a sadhaka. Sadhaka means one who is cultivating devotion in Krishna consciousness. So this is a very high devotee. He can stimulate, you know, bhava and prema. The other ones are the siddhas, and of course those are devotees who are perfect. Okay. Now, there are two categories of siddhas. Okay. Nitya siddhas and sadhana siddhas. Right there, am I guessing? Yeah. So, Nitya Siddha is somebody who's, wow, this is strange. Okay. Somebody who's never fallen down. They kind of come to the material world on a mission. They're sent here. Okay. And sadhana siddhas are people who become perfect by following sadhana, things like that. But I've heard the Prabhupada says, you are sadhana siddha until you become Nitya Siddha. That, you know, once you're on this platform, it says there's no difference once you achieve a perfection. About, you know, there are some people who one of these ideas is that some of us were created in the neutral position in between Mahavishnu and the material world. We didn't have any developed prema, and then at some point we go to the material world to develop it or something like that. You know, which is kind of a complicated thing how it all works out. And sometimes they quote from Jiva Dharma. And I got Nyayamara's translation of Jiva Dharma, because nobody ever tell me where it came from. They said, well, it says in Jiva Dharma. And I could not find it in Jiva Dharma. What I did find in Jiva Dharma is again and again, Jiva Dharma is like a novel, you know, people, Babaji so-and-so, and you know, Babaji's telling you stories, you know, good, nice devotees. And the guy is explaining all this stuff, and he says, but, you know, this is kind of an analogy. You really can't understand this until you're liberated. There's no time factor on this. You can't say, like, well, they were like this, then they became like this, then happened that. No, it doesn't happen like that. There's no time factor there in the first place. So it's all kind of happening simultaneously. So basically the same thing Prabhupada says is the same comprehensible at this point to become a little bit more liberated, how we got here. Even Buddha says the same thing. Don't worry about how you got here. Get out. But in any case, some siddhas are, people who could develop that as simple people came from the spiritual world. What difference, I don't know, it makes in terms of stimulating vibhava. I don't see. The three categories? Okay. Rupa Goswami gives two examples of two devotees who achieve perfection by practice of sadhana. SB 3, 1, 5, 15, 25, and Markandeya Rishi. Okay. So it gives two examples of devotees who achieve perfection by the Lord's causes mercy. Kripa Siddha. Okay. So the third category, it looks like. Okay. Kripa Siddha. Nitya Siddha. Okay. Okay. Chapters 20 to 25, which we just finished, concern alambana, Krishna or Krishna's devotees, as stimulus for ecstatic love. My things are pointed there. Okay. We've done this. Okay. So I think he's going to say next, we're going to do udipana. Okay. Chapter 26 concerns udipana. Okay. There it is. Objects related to Krishna or his devotee which stimulate ecstatic love. There are four categories of udipana. Guna, chesta, prasadana, and prakima. Prakima, which are qualities, adventures, ornaments, and miscellaneous stimulus. Just like that. Qualities, adventures, ornaments, and miscellaneous. Okay. The fun is just beginning. And you must know all of this. But not right away. Okay. Now the qualities, there are three categories of qualities. Bodily qualities, mental qualities, and vocal qualities. Okay? Yeah. Body, mind, and words. Of course, even Dinarda Maharaj doesn't have a graphic for the whole thing. Okay. We're making a pioneering effort here. As far as qualities, they can be divided into three groups, Papa says. Now, Krishna's qualities, his mind. Is this alambana? Or is it udipana? Well, it says it could be both, how you're looking at it like that. So if we're talking about Krishna's, when I analyze Krishna's body, it's kind of like separate from him as a stimulation, how he looks like this, he shapes like this. Okay, it's more like udipana. But if you're kind of taking it as Krishna, then it's alambana. So it's not like a real kind of sharp distinction, kind of how you're looking at it. If you want to be more analytical and separate Krishna's form from Krishna and how it's stimulating us and forget his Krishna's form and it's actually this, okay, that's udipana. But if you're taking Krishna's form as Krishna, then it's alambana. Okay? Okay. If it's clear, you're crazy because it's not clear. That's the whole point. He says it's kind of how you look at it. But it's the thing of whether you're kind of looking at it as Krishna's quality or Krishna himself. Question may be raised. Vibhava, alambana, refers to Krishna as stimulus for ecstatic love. Krishna's body, mind, and words are non-different from him. So why does Rupa Goswami separately categorize udipana? Prabhupada says, there is no difference between Krishna and his body, and therefore the transcendental features pertaining to his body are the same as Krishna. But because these qualities stimulate the devotee's ecstatic love, they have been analyzed as separate causes of that love. Okay. Bodily qualities. Guna. Krishna has already described Krishna's mind and speech in the sections of Vishaya Alambana. So the mind and words we've already talked about over here. but they can also be looked at as kind of like a separate things. Okay. Therefore, he not only discusses the qualities of Krishna's body. Okay. How many are there? Rupa Goswami describes first off, his age. What we got here? Yeah, so there's age, beauty, ornaments, and softness. We got four. Age, beauty, ornaments, and softness. Age, beauty, ornaments, and softness. That was over there. Oh, is this the same one? Wait a second now. Body. Yes. Huh? Huh. This is the same as over here. That's a three. Anyway. Udipana is in charge here. Guna. So and so Rupa. Body is Guna. And age has, it's a way of separating it. Okay. Now, his age can be divided into three ages, right?
Yes.
Kumar, Pauganda, and Kishore. Okay. Kumar, Pauganda, and Kishore. Okay. Okay. Now, Kishore can be divided into three ages. 11 to 12, 13 to 14, and 15. Okay. So we got three more for Kishore. No? 11, 13, and 15. Okay. Yeah. Now we're not fooling around. We got like real information on this. For example, like Aja Kishore, that's 11 to 12. At this age, quote, the luster of his body becomes so bright that it becomes an impetus for ecstatic love. You just see Krishna, he's just like, so bright like that. Yeah. Television cameras like that, so on. Wow. Similarly, there are reddish borders around his eyes and a growth of soft hairs around his body. The gopi named Kundalata describes Aja Kishore, quote, my dear friend, I have just seen an extraordinary beauty appearing in the person of Krishna. His blackish bodily hue appears just like the Indra Nila jewel. There are reddish signs on his eyes, and small soft hairs are coming out of his body. It's 11 to 12. The appearance of these symptoms has made him extraordinarily beautiful. Okay. Then Majja Kishore is 13 to 14. So many examples. From Ancha Kishore, all the above qualities reach full maturity at this point. After this age, Ancha Kishore, at the age of 16, he is Nava Yovana and he manifests that for the rest of his life, like that. So this is the age, okay?
But then why aren't there four?
Huh? I don't know.
Why is only three? When he becomes Navayovana, should be four.
Basically, these are, you got me. I can say, why is one or the other, and so on. And this is without this, reading the Nectar of Devotion without Dhanada Maharaj's Sanskrit and analog is like, it's even more difficult. So he makes it a lot more clear, but still, questions come up, even that. Even with his analysis, it's like you're saying, I thought the same thing, why aren't there four? Now we're talking about beauty. Okay, that's there. Okay, beauty. After age, beauty is a second category. And there's only one little sentence about that. The qualities of stimulate ecstatic love. Because his beauty is beautiful. Okay, the ornaments. He says it. It's basically short. Here he's not much. Softness. Okay, he also discusses that. Okay, now that's that. Now also we have chaste over here. And adventures. Right? Okay. Has finished describing Krishna's qualities. Now he briefly describes Krishna's adventures as his Rasa-lila and killing the demons. Dushtavada, slaying the wicked and Rasa-lila. Okay, briefly. Prasadana, third category is Krishna's attire. This can be divided into three categories. His dress, his natural decorations, and jewelry and ornaments. He starts talking about the dress here, like that. Rupa Goswami describes Krishna has three types of dresses. Oh my God, okay. You go on here? Okay. So prasada can be dresses, natural ornaments, or natural features in the ornaments. Okay. Now dresses, I got dresses here. Dresses can be divided into, what is this now? Three, okay, wait, we got a three category dress, okay, dresses. Dresses can be divided into yuga, two-piece outfits, upper and lower, chatuska, four-piece outfits, and buista, elaborate festive outfits, so more categories like that. So, dresses. This is a two-piece, four-piece, and plus. Okay. Yeah, that's the kind of thing afterwards you go and reassemble and put it. It's like a PowerPoint. This would be wonderful, no? PowerPoint, you just keep bringing them in like that. Wow. So Prabhupada, also the German mind, too, right? Just German mentality. This would be like, ah, this is religion. Now I understand love of God. My grandfather's Austrian. So Prabhupada summarizes by describing his four-piece outfit. Generally, there are four kinds of garments on the body of Krishna. His shirt, his turban, his belt, and wearing garments. Okay. In Vrindavan, he used to put on reddish garments with a golden shirt on his body and orange-colored turban on his head. Just imagine that.
What's the garments?
Okay. So he would reddish garment, which I guess is the lower part. Reddish
dhoti, no?
Golden shirt, orange turban on his head. Pretty. Yeah.
No chadar?
Huh?
No chadar?
He got me. Got a shirt. It doesn't say. Yeah. A kalpa. Natural decorations. Oh my God, okay. So there's six. I did this before. You know, I kind of knew it was. I knew it was there, but I never did it before. There's six kinds of natural decorations: hairstyle, ointments, flower garlands, face paint, decorative tilak, and toy lotus. Now let me put those in at this point.
Okay. You can make symbols.
Huh?
You can make nice symbols.
Yeah, something like that. Or I go sit in the tower for 14-point type and go down to 8-point type. That's a PowerPoint though, because you can blow them up and stuff like that. You know, PowerPoint is like Bill Gates' dream of life, just and put them all together and stuff like that. Yeah. Okay.
Can we write a paper on this topic? And
no, this one you can't. This is what we're not going to write a paper on. You know, other ones are pick other ones like that. This is kind of to show you the life. You start reading it, what's going to happen. Okay, jewelry, we got that. Then finally there's mandana. Okay, Krishna lists some of Krishna's jewelry and ornaments. Crown, earrings, necklace, another type of necklace, chatuski. It's not Russian, but it's
somebody.
Chatuski. Lamaya. You know where Russia comes from, the word? Pianok said, a great historian in India, comes from Rishi Alaya, the place of the rishis. Like Himalaya.
Oh, yeah.
Himalaya means place of ice. He has all these strange definitions. Scandinavia comes from Skanda. Deutschland comes from Deutsche land. You know? So I asked my friend Dr. Vandavidai, who was a real heavy historian, and he said he's kind of eccentric, but he said he has evidence for everything he's talking about. Like that.
But now Russian scientists used to claim that Sanskrit came from Russian language.
Okay. Yeah. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? Yeah. No, it was Rishi Alaya. Devanagari. So Prabhupada summarizes, okay. So he has all these ornaments. Where's his Vanamali? Where's it somewhere? That's Vanamali. Where's that from? Okay. Flowers. Miscellaneous. Find it. Items such as Krishna's flute, buffalo horn, footprints comprise the fourth category of Udipana. The remainder of chapter 26, beginning with a section on Krishna's flute, lists each item and illustrates it poetically. Chapter 26 must be pretty big. And that finishes off. Okay. Now, what we're talking about here is, I got to pick it out here. Is it Kumar, age, body, Udipana, Vibhava? Yeah. Or else we're talking about Yeah. So anyway, this is what Rupa Goswami is doing with that. You know. It must be kind of fun just to take Krishna and do all these things in certain kind of categories.
It's like a puzzle.
Yes, or you know what's the word chitra something, Rupa Goswami? It was a game. He has like these verses.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they go like in circles like that and stuff, and they cross over and go back and forth, and the words cross over. You know, it's like this is the kind of thing they would do. It's just unbelievable. Publishes the Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati could remember everything he ever read, like that. He read everything. If you look on the internet again, on the YouTube, I guess his name is Stephen Keen, K-E-A-N or K-E-E-N. He's probably still alive. He's one of these idiot savants. This is a little psychology word. Usually they fit in the category of autistic, like that. And autistic, what does that mean? Basically that their brains work in some way, brain or mind, usually a combination, works some way that different than normally, so they don't filter the information or process it the same way we do. Most cases, they're like marginally functional. You know, one of these guys is functional, totally. He has a tendency just to look at things a lot, but he carries on quite naturally. You know? So one time, for example, he's on the internet too, they had him, like he sat down in Oxford, and started, he does his numbers, and he can communicate, he says they're kind of like colors and textures, the way I see them and stuff, and I've learned to put them together so they fit together properly, and they don't fit together, and he has all his number things especially. So he's the number pi, what is number pi?
Infinite, right? It's 3.142,
okay, he did it to 12,000 places.
Really?
Took him like 18 hours. He started seeing 3.12973647 22 18. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So all these guys, are testing him. It's Harvard, Oxford mathematicians are sitting there. They're kind of looking, and you see these guys are. You know, the Deepak is going. At some point, they just kind of because they're checking it. They know it. You know, calculated. And at some point, they just give up. You know, this is unbelievable. Shocking. You know, I think it took 18 hours. What he just did. You know, he just took a break. You know. The papaya, 12,000 places. How does he do it? Is some kind of system or something? Okay, they don't know. He doesn't know. We have his experiences again like this. He can describe it. The other ones is Bill Keane's. Dustin Hoffman had a movie called The Rain Man or something like that, which is based upon this. You know? So this guy, the first guy is kind of like, you know, maybe one fifth the size of the second guy, and he's always kind of dysfunctional. His father takes care of him. He takes a book, they could go to some, come here, come to Brussels, okay. They take the Brussels phone book, you know, sit there. With one eye, he goes down one page, the other eye goes on the other page, takes about 3 seconds to do each page, 1,001, 1,002, 1,003. He's memorized it, both sides, okay. Now, and this guy is pastime in the evening, okay. Next day, you go to the program, and ask you, what's your name? My name is, you know, Dorothy Smith, you know, what's your husband, so-and-so. Oh, your phone number is.
Yeah.
It's just like, in his favorite pastime is go to the library. He goes to the library and stuff. You know? But the thing is, he can't categorize it too well. You know, but he has some ability to put it in categories. And Bhakti Siddhanta could take everything and do it. It's like, you know, your mind. And you see, your mind should be over there. You're organizing things in your mind. Same thing, you're putting your library in order and thoughts and where they're connected like that. So Bhakti Siddhanta was. Probably said it was like arguing in the library when you talk about it. He would just quote all of these things, you know. And he read so much too. So he had like. So Bhakti Siddhanta, for example, Prabhupada says, in no Veda or no Purana does any demigod ever say, I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. People may say that about them, but he says in no place. Not only Prabhupada knows that from personal experience, but probably from Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he's, you know, read everything, and he said, no, any place that they themselves say, I am. But Krishna is the only person who says, I am, is a big personality of Godhead. Yeah. So you look at our tradition, we have, and Prabhupada says Jiva Goswami is considered the greatest scholar who ever lived. You know. And, of course, most people don't know him in the West, but I was told in Varanasi, which is a big, one of the biggest universities in India, the Department of Philosophy has a sub-department just for Jiva Goswami's works. He wrote, you probably know this, he wrote about 400,000 verses, which is, you know, four times the size of the Mahabharata, you know. So, you know, he was a fantastic scholar. Radhika Raman, he invited me to South America. Right after he graduated from Oxford, his father was on a papal vacation, so he came to South America. We had a tour of the universities. And people told us that all these universities here, they have kind of like this British idea that there was no philosophy in India. You know, it was all this kind of superstition. There was no philosophy that started with the Greeks. So he got up and he said, okay, you know, he said, I studied Indian philosophy at Oxford. And there's so many philosophers. I just took one tradition, which is this, you know, Gaudiya Vaishnavas. I took one philosopher, Jiva Goswami. He wrote all these things. You know, he also wrote the Sad Sandarbhas, these six Sandarbhas. I took one of those, and I translated about two-thirds of it, and that was sufficient for a PhD in philosophy from Oxford University. He's just like one guy. You know? Oh, so yeah, so there is philosophy in India. There's this total superstition, mistake. There's no logic or anything else. Actually, compared to the West is just like imbeciles, you know, compared to the level of, you know, philosophy and consideration you find these guys like that. Kanada, Astavarga, you know, it's unbelievable. So, Rupa Goswami's little, you know, kicks out this little thing on what is bhakti, and it kind of show you just like, you know, what the book actually is. And it's, you know, if you, why am I hearing about the color of Krishna's flute? Why is that? Right after Bhagavatam, right after Mangalarti, Krishna played this flute like this and that, you know, after the ocean, okay. No, because it's part of this whole thing about what he's like, and like David Haverman was saying, it's not just for understanding. That's maybe even the minor thing. The major thing is actually to relish these things. So Nectar Devotion is actually a book to read and to relish. And you won't find these things other places, like what Krishna looks like, what he smells like, what the gopi said about him, what happened, this and that. It's a whole summary of these very advanced, you know, things about Krishna and the stimulus. What stimulates love for Krishna? Like so many things, yeah. His form, his beauty, his age, his ornaments, his pastimes, his devotees, you know, like that. Yeah. But okay, this is it, you know. But he puts it in nice categories like that and so on. Yeah. And at least the Alambana Udivana is in the Upanishads, like that. After that, if Bharata Muni is going to do the same thing or not, I don't know. And Marj Bhoja, you know, he goes into more details like that, I don't know, in terms of the drama. I would think so, because they're trying to analyze, for example, the drama, definitely, you know, you see the drama in the credits, you know, definitely costumes is always, you know, special credit for costumes, like that. You know. If you've done any theater or anything else, you know, that's a big, it's a whole separate thing, a whole separate education when you go into studying theater is costume design. Yeah. And it is, you look at it, you know, it's set design, right? And that's part of, I forget what that is, Anubhav or something. But the set design too, because you look at these, you know, really good movies and stuff like that, they're period movies, like Joan of Arc or something, they really got the, you know, the people, the dress, the appearance, the transportation, everything else. It's just like that's something they do, really. Hollywood probably said they're good at this. They're a little wider to it, but they got really good at the effects and stuff like that. So many of these historical movies and stuff are really authentic, and they take you right there to what it was like. You know, and so on. And so it's costume design is the whole thing. Peter Brooks' Mahabharata. Okay, we got 2 minutes. Any questions?
I have one question.
Okay.
For the essay writing.
Huh? Yeah.
Are we supposed to analyze these things like this
one?
No,
you're supposed to get like 2 pages or something like that. But you can just mention, you know, what is Vibhava, and you can see Rupa Goswami goes into extreme analysis, which includes such things as, like that. A little bit like, yeah, it's going to be a little bit, basically.
Basically, you could take one trick and follow it.
You could do it that way. Yeah. Again, so you can emphasize more whatever you want to in the thing, but basically it should cover Rupa Goswami's biography, the history of rasa, the summary of Nectar of Devotion, which we did. And then it should be in the details Baba Bhakti, and specifically a little bit about Vibhava, and then one of the other Bhavas, which you pick out to read, and then finally how it applies in the modern world. That's enough. Yeah.
And can we choose these different Bhavas independently,
yeah,
or can just everybody have one?
No. You pick what you want to. black cat.
So nice. Why, if you would make the chart, why you don't want this in in PowerPoint?
Why I didn't do it?
Why we can't include it in the... Because it's not so many words. It's like...
Because it's an essay.
This could be an appendix or
something. Yeah, it could be. But you only get like credit for it by words, so you won't get so many.
No. But I think...
I have to grade this thing. So, I don't know, what am I supposed to do now? I'm supposed to give you points by the words or point for the thing like that. You know? Yeah. And you could do it. If you did it, great. I mean, great, great contribution to society. And I'd have to probably have to talk to Roddy Gravan as a person. I'm working for him. He's just more like scoring the thing. Well, how do you score a graph? And, oh, okay, you could like this and that. And, but it would be very nice. Because, again, it fits for PowerPoint because he just put it up there, you know, like this. But PowerPoint, you can, like, you know, show each one like that and stuff and how they're connected. They come in each one and talk about them. Actually, the whole book would be a great PowerPoint show. Because it is, it's just a... It's a very dynamic book of things moving and examples coming in like that and so on. Yeah. And I have a suspicion that we're talking about it, that when you put it all together, it's very tasteful how it goes. You know, we didn't discuss this, but qualities, the ornaments, maybe they fit one after another like that. Mm. We're dealing with a genius. Yeah.
It's interesting just for myself. It's not for the paper or for something.
It's interesting for me too. It would be very nice contribution to the Vaishnava world. I was never done it before. Now I'm going to open up, what's it called? VLC Media. Okay. What was I?
Peter Brooks.
I was going to shoot Peter Brooks?
I think so.
Okay, why not? I haven't got my amplifier here. I wasn't going to do this.
It was a very nice movie on San Francisco, Peter Brooks.
Oh, he did that too, huh?
Yeah.
He did really, he's really good stuff also.
Yeah, very good movie.
So we'll read his biography from the Britannica. Open folder. There's a really nice little speaker, module speaker. Very good. Neos DVDs, my DVDs, Angelus Academy DVDs, my Bhagavad, Fire for Effect. Looks like I'm happy for that one.
Amrita Maya Purusha Sarva
full screen here.
Yeah, I think you just double click on it.
Yeah, double click.
So Oscar does the same thing. No sound to start with, maybe you stole it from him. How you start the drama. It's the whole thing, how you do it.
Three gods rule the universe. Three are also one. Brahma, creator, Shiva, the destroyer, always present when history ends. The third is Vishnu, who's quite the reverse. It's he who maintains the world. It's he who makes them endure. When chaos threatens, as it does now, Vishnu takes on a human form and descends among us to play his role. Some hate that he might have come down as Krishna. His action is subtle, mysteriously clear. He's the heart of all that's invisible.
Okay. There's a whole discussion about how to introduce the characters, the theme, and in terms of drama. People are Goswami has a whole book called Nati Shastri, which describes all this stuff like that technically. Now here what he does, here's the introducing. This kid's gonna be like, he's gonna listen to Vyasadeva, tell the story, everything else. This is his ancestors. He's just walking, it's very incredible because he's integrating the modern stage with the actual drama in such a way that it's like, he's going to wander around the and later on you'll see all these places appearing in the movie. Mm-hmm. This is interesting because the other ones are movies, but this one was this traveling show all over the world. It was like 3 days, 6 hours each, and if you paid your tickets, you paid for 3 days, 6 hours every day. And it was a whole experiment, you know. So finally we edited it, and this is about 2 hours. You know? But this one is actually like a stage play edited into a movie. It's not a movie. No. It's here you've got all the stage
Yeah, I mean,
a perfect prince.
What is Bhishma?
His mind.
mind was clear. His body strong. His heart noble. But he couldn't be king.
Why?
Because he'd sworn a terrible oath. I am sure, forever the love of woman.
He said that?
He said just that. I am sure, forever the love of woman. And the gods applauded his act. In fact, they were so pleased with Bhishma that they gave him the power to choose the time of his death.
Is it possible?
It was possible in those days.
A little bit more.
Keep going, son of the mist. Haven't started yet. What happened at the beginning?
Bhishma! Bhishma! Save me. I've been rejected by the man I love. And you are the noblest of men. You can't abandon me now. I will love you all my life. Marry me.
No. I can't marry you, Amba. No women can come into my life. Asalva has rejected you. You are free. Go back to your father.
No, I'm not free. And I refuse to go back to my father, who bartered me like an animal. Listen. Hear what I'll do. I will walk straight ahead, in ripped clothes, begging my way. And I will live with one thought, only one. A thought like a blade. How to find someone to fight you to your death.
No one can kill me. It's impossible.
I will do so all the same. I too pronounce a vow. In one of the worlds I will find your execution. There's now on this earth a woman who will always think of you. Never forget me, Bhishma. I am your
dad. stay tuned 1 hour from now. Right in the middle of the battle of Kurukshetra, Bhishma's lying there and all this war, everything else. Okay, this is that you, Amba? And she comes in like that. Yes, Bhishma. You describe what happens. Everything else. She burned herself to death. Everything else. You know the story, right? Yeah. And then she finishes off, I think she says something like, she's going away and I'll meet you tomorrow, and now I'm a man, this and stuff, you know. But then Bhishma, she's going away, then Bhishma says, there's a very thin line between love and hate, isn't there, Bhishma? Isn't there, Amba? Amba says, yes, Bhishma. Yeah. Very good. That's really, in the movies, a lot of times, very superficial. But in this thing, he really brings out the feelings and stuff like that. And once you see all this, you start seeing like it's not just happening by chance, you know. Even the cuts and stuff like that is all. Some people have the feeling. So Peter Brooks, he's not one lifetime. You do this. You see these people do this from very early childhood. They start drawing, or they can do music, or someone like him, they can do this, and he's not only that, he can collect all these people. Like that. Not just he knew it himself, but he had the ability to associate with people who like the costumes came. The lady who played Draupadi is the only Indian in the thing. She comes from a royal family. Her husband was a senator. They have a museum of traditional costumes they've collected for over centuries. The designer went there and looked at all the stuff and designed the costumes. And the costumes in this are just incredible. They're just like really nice, you know, very like organic and earthy with things on them and stuff. It looks like these fake Indian costumes with phony beards and stuff. This looks like stuff you'd be, you know, nice to wear with nice ornaments or turquoises and stuff. But that was the whole thing of the costume design. And even, you know, even what's his name, Vyasa? You know, you think it's kind of by chance? No, it looks like, you know, hermit type guy with rags and stuff. Okay, you got to make some, design some rough rags here like that. So, reading assignment. You can look over, finish off. You know, what do you call it?
The recipe.
Yeah, the recipe. And then go ahead with the waves of devotion in this section. You went over most things, so you can kind of go through it. And then, one thing we have, 2 more days actually. Kind of, so we're ahead of ourselves. We can just watch movies for the next 2 days. Get another zombie comes in. But actually, the next thing is then modern theater and
there's no problem.
You know, taking a couple of days for that. You know. I think it's what it does. It makes it all relevant. And you can see that. You can see like exactly how this is how these things work, and then to be able to take it to life, not just in the theater, but actually in life and stuff like that. Yeah. And you can see how, for the most part, we're living out shallow, meaningless lives. You know, lives, there's no jibari, no, we're just going through it like that. You know? When am I going to get a real life? You know? And Krishna says, you want a real life? Okay. Battle of Kurukshetra. Hang on. Wow. We're in the, where's it? It's off now. We're at San Marcos.